Pulitzer Prize and Tony Award-winning playwright and actor Tracy Letts, Frying Pan regular Steve Gatlin, and we reload this week's news with Amara Enya and Mario Smith. And now, here's your host, a man who has transitioned to his spring socks, Justin Kaufman.
Maybe too early. You know, today'd be a great day to keep the wool on. I thought I was going thin. I was going almost like a spandex, like a pantyhose. Like an ankle sock. Nope. My loss. My ankles just have to be cold. You know, that's how it works. Good evening, everybody. It's Justin Kaufman here on The Download. With you till 11 o'clock tonight on 720 WGN. Excited to be with you on this Friday as you begin your weekend. Or maybe you're working tonight. Or maybe you're on the road trying to get somewhere. Wherever you're at, I'm glad to ride shotgun with you tonight. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Big show tonight. I'm so excited. I mean, this has been such a great week for... It's not every day that you can say, oh, I got a Pulitzer Prize winner in the house, right? This will be our second Pulitzer Prize winner of the week. That's crazy. In studio tonight, Steppenwolf Ensemble member Tracy Letts. Tracy Letts, a tremendous playwright and actor, August Osage County. And just that play alone, the slew of Tonys for best play. He's also won best Tony for best actor, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, back in 2013. As Rose said, he was in the show Homeland. He also was in the HBO show Divorce. He is going to be in the new movie, The Lovers, with Deborah Winger. And he's got a new show on stage at the Steppenwolf that starts next week, Linda Vista. So we will talk with Tracy Letts. It's coming up after the 7:30 news, live in studio tonight. That's great. You're a big Letts fan.
Oh, man. See everything he does. I want to spend 45 minutes talking about his appearance in the Seinfeld Festivus episode.
That's right.
The Strike as one of the creepy guys.
That has to be probably his biggest street cred role of all time.
Oh yeah,
it shows up. Like, I was looking at all the stuff today getting ready for the interview, and it's like, and he also he was in a Festivus episode in Seinfeld.
That's gotta be really frustrating for him, you know. This I mean look at all his
Pulitzer
stuff
prizes,
yeah. And then, you know,
and Festivus, he's probably there'd be worse things, like if he was on different sitcoms maybe, and you're like, oh yeah, you're the worst beef guy, you know, or whatever. But to be in the Festivus episode of Seinfeld, that's a classic. So I would say that. But I'm excited to talk to him. He's got the new play. Looks terrific, of course. And he's got another play, too, that Steppenwolf just announced as part of the 2017-2018 season, The Minutes, a political comedy that is already slated for Broadway. It reunites him and Anna Shapiro, the director of August Osage County, and they are already slated. They've already got the theater booked out. That's coming up in 2018. So we'll talk with Tracy Letts at the big table. Also, we will reload this week's news. Amara Enya and Mario Smith in studio tonight. What are the biggest stories of the week? Overreported, underreported, winners, losers. Which story are we going to remember in 5, 10, 15, 500 years from tonight, this week? I don't want to give it away. Kind of slipped up right there. It probably is from today. There were some big stories, but the big story out of Washington today probably is going to have some legs when it comes to history. Or maybe not. We'll see.
How's the giraffe doing?
Yeah, they're still looking at the giraffe.
All right.
Yeah, I know. That was one that I had as a short list for story we'll remember in 100 years. April the giraffe. The webcam pregnancy that still has not happened. So, and then tonight, for all the Friday faithful here at The Download, you're very excited. It's time for his monthly visit. Ladies and gentlemen, Steve Gatlin is in the house. He's got a brand new invention he had all month to get ready for it. He's excited. He says tonight is a winner, and he will be on in the 10 o'clock hour, 312-981-7200, for the frying pan. The most highly anticipated segments of the month. People start calling in days ahead of time. And tonight he will reveal his latest invention. I'm excited. And I think he learned a lot from the last one. I think he had a month and a couple days because of the way that it worked out.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like he had the time. He's like a pitcher. He's stretched out. He's got the rest. He's ready to rock. He learned from the last one that didn't go so well. And he's ready for tonight.
Can't wait.
Right?
Can't wait.
Can't wait. 312-981-7200. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier tonight playing double duty. Heard him all over the Rokan and Devolante show today. Rokan. Also traffic with Roger Badish Friday. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right, it's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Got a big show tonight, so let's get right to it. It's time for the carryout. This, of course, nightly segment where I read the news. So you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Is it true? Did I wake up from a dream? Did President Trump fail at a business deal? Well, politics ain't business, and President Trump probably learned his first lesson. Congress, not your employees. Although I'm definitely looking forward to the boardroom climax scene when Trump, with Ivanka and Donald Trump Jr. flanking him, listen to Paul Ryan, Mike Pence, and Rance Priebus argue about who should be fired. It's your fault. No, it's your fault. Okay, we can agree. It's Cyndi Lauper's fault. If you're new to today, the Republicans failed to get enough votes in the House for the new health care plan. What's it mean? Well, Trump threatened to keep the Affordable Care Act in place if there was no vote. But something tells me they're going to continue to twist arms and have a vote, I don't know, maybe next week. But what are they actually voting on? At this point, it seems like the bill has been modified and compromised so much there's not much left. Maybe, I don't know, the words health care? Yeah, can we take those out? Can we take health and care? Can we replace health with tax and maybe care with cut? Can we do that? Would you be surprised if that happened? I would not be surprised. The internet and, well, frankly, everybody's riled up over a photo showing Vice President Mike Pence leading a health benefit discussion in a standing room only conference room with all men, all white dudes. And the kicker is that the discussion was mostly over what health care benefits should be covered for women. Come on. Come on. Please tell me this is fake news, right? Please tell me this is a picture of a prayer meeting from 2013. No? It's real? Come on. The optics are startling. Talk about a huge middle finger in the air to women, huh? You want to march? Go march. We'll take care of what you need to take care of yourself. I mean, you couldn't even put Ivanka in the room? Elizabeth Dole's not around? Amorosa, Kellyanne Conway? A picture of Nancy Reagan? Anybody? It's ridiculous. It's ridiculously tone deaf. A Cook County judge has ordered the state to pay lawmakers in Illinois during the budget impasse. Some Democrats filed a lawsuit saying that the comptroller's office was not paying them on purpose for political reason. This was back when Republican Leslie Munger was in charge. So now the Democrats, Susana Mendoza, is following the rule and cutting the checks. The Illinois GOP wants Mendoza to issue a stay or just flat out reject the judge's ruling and says that now she's playing politics. You're playing politics. You're playing politics. So much playing politics. Is this the new game everybody has on their iPhone? Is it the new Candy Crush? Can I play? Can my avatar be blonde hair, cool sunglasses? Anybody? Come on, man. Irony alert. President Trump approved the completion of the Keystone Pipeline in North Dakota that would bring crude oil from the Dakotas to other states. It's highly controversial because Native Americans are worried that if the pipeline sprung a leak, it would do so right in their water supply. Hence the protests. And you know what? It's not just fantasy. Right on cue that as Trump approves the pipeline, word comes from about 150 miles away that a different pipeline burst and caused a spill covering 530,000 gallons of oil. Yep, largest in North Dakota state history. Right down the hill, right into the rivers and the lakes in Billings County. Crazy bad timing, right? Also, you do know that the Keystone Pipeline would be coming right through the Chicago area? Nah, I wouldn't worry about it. Crude oil? Sounds safe. Maybe that's why more and more residents are leaving Cook County. For the second year in a row, Cook County has recorded population loss, which, let's face it, has nothing to do with oil, but more with the grease, the political kind. Am I right? High five. Nobody? Actually, I'm fine with the loss of population. Anything to bring down the line at the Walgreens on a Saturday afternoon, right? No line. No line of makeup. It's the worst. Save it for the worst. When asked about fending off automation, the new Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin, two N's, said that that's not even on our radar. Of course, economists will tell you that automations and robots are the biggest cause of job loss in America, not companies moving to other countries. So not great that our economies are. It's not on his radar. Mnuchin, two N's, then turned to his deputy secretary who said, sir, it's not an issue. I wouldn't worry about it. It's fake news. Whew, that was a close one. Continue with planet takeover. My robot. In weather, wow, it was 176 degrees today. Must have felt nice. I didn't go outside. Why would you, man? Come on. I don't want UV rays messing with my skin. Also, I don't know what wild animals are out there roaming around just up from hibernation looking to eat. You know, think about those things. The bear woke up today. First thing he's looking for. You know? Who's got the short shorts on? No thanks. I'll see you guys in May. All right. In sports, the Bears making Super Bowl moves. Wait, sorry, that was a typo. Super butt moves. Butt fumble? Anybody? Backup quarterback Mark Sanchez was signed after spending last year on the bench in Dallas. He had a mediocre career in the NFL, mired by one play where he fumbled the ball off his behind. Hence, butt fumble. But he did play a huge role in developing Dallas Cowboy rookie Dak Prescott last year, so some believe this is a sign that the Bears could draft a QB next month. Me, I say Jamal Adams out of LSU in the first round, then Jabril Peppers in the second, because we just want defense. Mike Brown, Brian Urlacher type guys. That'll keep us happy for a couple weeks, and that's what you need to do right now. No, you're going to have to make us happy. The Hawks beat the Stars in the shootout last night. That coupled with another wild loss, and the Hawks have an 8-point lead with 8 games to go. This is where we pause for the cocky dance.
It's the cocky dance. It's the cocky dance.
The Hawks have 6 of their last 8 on the road, which I would usually say is a challenge, but come on, it's the Hawks. They're the T-Pain of the NHL.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what.
Any T-Pain fans out there? No? Tonight, the Sweet 16 continues. The Big Ten got bounced last night. Michigan lost a nail-biter, and Purdue got knocked out by Kansas. Tonight, Wisconsin goes for it against Florida. And can you believe it? Baseball 9 days away. The Cubs take on the Cardinals on ESPN. Sunday Night Baseball on April 2nd. Lots of intrigue there. The Cubs won the series. Fowler, Hayward, Lackey, Lou Brock, Bruce Sutter, Ryan Terrio. There's a lot to unpack right there. There's a lot. And finally tonight, Netflix announced that Adam Sandler is going to do 4 more movies for them coming up in the next few years. Now this is where I'd like to see robots take a job, right?
This is information I could have used yesterday.
That's the carry out for March 24th, 2017. Hey, what a nice day. We didn't see it coming. So tonight, pea and potato soup on us. All right, coming up, Tracy Letts in studio at the big table. We'll talk with him about his new play at Steppenwolf, also his career. Got a lot going on, including a new movie with Deborah Winger coming out in May. After that, we'll reload this week's news with Amara Enya and Mario Smith. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you? Doing double duty tonight. I heard you on Roe.
Oh, man. You know, no rest for the wicked, my friend.
I was going to say, man, we need to make sure you're getting a 30 and a 45 tonight.
They had to go deep on the bench tonight, man. Way down. I'm like the 12th man.
You're just sitting in the corner like, I can start early.
Rob will do it.
Yeah, I'll do it.
It's like way back when I was an intern, hoping that Robert Murphy would collapse and I'd have to take over. Welcome to Q101. Rob's taking over.
Rob's on a smoke break. Wow. That's yeah.
Yeah. Remember those days?
I do.
When you were an intern?
Absolutely.
You'd be daydreaming, and then the host would come over and kick you and say, get me some more coffee.
I have a great story to that where the first day that I ever got to produce a show, I was an intern to produce a show. Mm-hmm. This was 90s. And it was a day after Thanksgiving or holiday or something like that. And there was a guest host. So I got there like 4 hours early.
Sure.
Got the latte from the old coffee place ready to rock. Get half hour out, 15 minutes out, show starting, host never showed. Yeah, can you imagine? Host never showed. He showed 15 minutes late, and it was just like, I didn't have, like, if I were a producer with any sort of experience, like a week, I probably would have been like, all right, I'll host it. But it was like my first, I didn't even know how to get into the studio, and I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do here. And watching all the suits around just yell and scream. Well, I'm like, well, that was a tough first day.
I'm not sure if it would sell outside our circles, but you, me, Pete, others in our industry, we should come together and put a book together. I mean, the stories.
Near misses.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
It's called 30 Seconds to Air.
Right, exactly.
All right. Yes, we'll work on that. That's what we'll do. This will be our weekend project.
We'll I got 4 kids. I can't do that on the weekend.
We really need nighttime weekend editing.
Right, exactly.
Thanks, Rob. Coming up, Tracy Letts in studio. Very excited about this. He's coming in now. We will have him in studio and for the big table. We'll have him until 8:30 tonight. It's true. I forgot about that memory of being a snot-nosed 19-year-old kid, maybe even younger. And I finally got my chance because it was one of those, you know, in radio when you're an intern, they'll love to give you the opportunity to, you know, to do a show when it's holiday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's like when you make your that's move. Your money, right. So, yeah, that was exciting. That was exciting to be in the – and it was in the old Clark and Adams building downtown, the studio that turned into Frank Thomas's recording studio. No big deal.
All his hits.
All those hits.
It's like Hitsville, USA, part two.
Part two. And, yeah, so it was kind of – it was interesting because I had, like – I had booked round tables. You know, like I had, like – it was like an hour and a half show or something. And – yeah, and it was before cell phones. It's been like 1994, 1995 maybe. And I just remember that sneaking feeling. Like I honestly got there. I think the show started maybe at 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. And I got there at like 5 o'clock in the morning. Like I was so ready. I was just so wired. And the fact that we got closer and closer and closer to showtime and he still wasn't there. And I had no concept of when a host was supposed to show up.
Right,
for a shift.
Yeah.
I thought maybe he just walks in.
They walk in, yeah. Yeah.
No call, nothing. And so we ended up, what we ended up doing is like run, like there was a network show before ours, you know, like that's how it worked on where I worked. And we just, it rolled over. It just kept going, like repeats itself. And so for the like for 15, 20 minutes, all the listeners were calling in like, what is going on? Where is the show? And he ended up showing up, like, and he just went, I'll never forget, sorry, guys, a little stomach issue.
Gross.
Gross, and what? There's toilets here.
Yeah. The show must go on.
Yeah. And I worked with him a few other times, and I'll keep his name off record, but that, I think he just forgot about those experiences, and he gave me that excuse a couple other times throughout, like being late. He was always late. He was perpetually late.
There was a back early in my career as well. I was board hopping, you know. I would just like run the board for various shows, you know, like syndicated things. At the station, there was a lot of brokered programming. So it was a Saturday afternoon. One of my friend's weddings was Saturday night. I work until 6, bust out of there, go to the wedding. 5:30 rolls around, changing my suit, getting all ready. As soon as the next person comes in, I'm gonna dart out there, and it's one of these. It was a woman who was like 100 years old and did like a psychic show. One of those famous psychics never showed up. Just like never. And
what do you do?
And same thing. Like I looked on a few numbers, programming. You know, like there was numbers, phone numbers hanging on the wall. Nothing. So I just ended up playing songs from like the classic rock canon. Not announcing them because I was too nervous. You know, to like say, "Hey, that was Led Zeppelin with Misty Mountain Hop."
Get my radio voice on. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a little Led Zeppelin for you. Rock in the spot.
That's a telltale sign of me where another person would have said, "Oh, this is
my chance. Yeah, I'm gonna take psychic calls.
I'm rolling the tape. Yeah, and get this out there." But no, just like
couldn't do it.
Play a lot of Doors for the next 4 hours in my suit.
The B sides getting like 12-minute tracks in. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Tracy Letts is here, and we will talk to him about his new show that starts next week at the Steppenwolf Theater. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 at WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, we started the week with a Pulitzer Prize and Tony Award winner in David Auburn, and we end the week with another amazing artist who's won a Pulitzer and a slew of Tony Awards, Steppenwolf Ensemble member Tracy Letts. Letts' new play, Linda Vista, is having its world premiere at the Steppenwolf. Previews start Thursday, and the show runs through May 21st. The show's about a 50-year-old man named Wheeler who has to start over, start fresh, and explores the dilemma of who you've become versus who you want to be. Letts is one of Chicago's most accomplished theater artists. He's won Tonys for his outstanding work in August Osage County, and he's also won for his outstanding acting, playing George in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf back in 2013. Letts has written about 10 plays, which include The Minutes, which will reunite him with August Osage County director Anna Shapiro, and is already penciled in for a Broadway run in 2018. The star of stage and screen just wrapped up a part in HBO show Divorce, and he's playing opposite Deborah Winger in the highly anticipated movie The Lovers out this May. Tracy Letts is my guest tonight at the big table. Mr. Letts, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So this play, how important is it for you to have the world premiere in Chicago?
Oh, it's huge for me. One of the reasons I live here is not only because of our amazing theater community, but I'm a member of the Steppenwolf Theater Company, and I have a great group of artists, not only in our ensemble, but just great Chicago theater actors to choose from. And I love starting a play here. There's no place better to start a play, as far as I'm concerned.
What is it about Chicago? I mean, obviously, being a part of Steppenwolf is advantageous in the way that you guys are an ensemble and you've been able to put together such great work. But what is it about putting a premiere together and putting a play together at all when you talk about the process and the experience of putting it on in Chicago?
First and foremost, really, it's Chicago theater audiences. They're game for anything. And they love new work. You know, if we do too many revivals at Steppenwolf, we'll hear about it from our subscribers.
Really?
They actually like the new plays. It's not just the case at our theater. It's true of theaters around town. Theater audiences in this town are very adventuresome, and they love new work, and they are willing to gamble. Because you never know what you're going to get with a new play, right? It could just be a disaster. But they're willing to take that risk, because when you see something new that works, that's a really exciting moment.
Are you a theater artist who loves the process as a playwright? Do you love the process of the rehearsals and the state and the, you know, the last sort of dress rehearsals, things like that?
Oh, I love it. It's the place where I'm absolutely the most comfortable, being in a rehearsal room and seeing it all come together. And the way we collaborate in the theater, particularly in Chicago theater, everybody chips in. Everybody's got a voice. Best idea wins. A lot of great minds in the room. When I'm working at Steppenwolf, I have a lot of support around me, not only from actors who are very experienced at putting new work up, but great directors, designers, not to mention just even our staff at Steppenwolf. We have a lot of really good minds at work. So I think also Chicago, it doesn't value pretension. You're just not going to get away with a lot of pretentious work in this town, and it keeps you honest in a sense as a playwright.
Well, you're very fortunate to have an ensemble around. I mean, the way that Steppenwolf works, because you know we kind of talked a little bit about this with David Auburn as well. That the more success you have as a playwright, when you need to have the right people around you to say this isn't that great. Tracy, this is this scene needs to be reworked, and you can trust and respect the people around you because you've worked with them in the past, and they're not sort of jumping into last minute after you've won Tonys and be like, bravo, yeah, bravo. They're real with you.
Oh, it's huge. I mean, you can see in another process where it becomes a real problem, where somebody's surrounded by yes men who are telling them it's great when it's not great. I really value the people who tell me it's not great. And can articulate why. I'm really lucky. I'm very lucky in that regard.
Playwright and actor Tracy Letts in studio with us. His new play Linda Vista is opens the previews run next week, starting Thursday. It's open and running through May 21st. Let's talk about the play. Wheeler, I kind of mentioned at the top, I kind of squirmed a little bit at my sort of really quick one-sentence synopsis of your play.
It's always hard to boil things down to just a sentence or a line or something catchy to get people into the theater. I mean, he's a divorced, middle-aged guy. He's been living in his wife's garage for a couple of years. It's a bad divorce, and now he's finally got his own apartment, and he starts trying to find a successful relationship with a woman. That's the jumping off point. And it's a comedy. It's 2.5 hours. I don't know what else to tell you.
That's right?
It's a good time.
How much of a character like Wheeler embodies you as a writer? As you put this together, and I've read the interviews about some of your other plays, and even August, Osage County, and the dysfunction of families,
right,
and where you grew up in Oklahoma, and all that kind of stuff. Do you feel where does a play like this come from? A guy who's close in age to your age, and
right,
and do you write a character with you in mind?
Well, I mean, I'm the place. I'm the one I start with, and then I let my imagination take over from there. But in the case of Wheeler, he's 50 years old. I'm 51. He's a white guy living in America in 2017.
Sure.
He happens to be pretty opinionated guy. We have some things in common, me and this guy. He also exhibits a lot of bad behavior. Some of it is bad behavior I hope I've grown out of, but it's certainly stuff I'm guilty of in my life. And so it's one of the reasons you're right to address those things in yourself.
Right.
To address some of the flaws you have. And if you can be honest with yourself and expose some of those things, it's actually it's a really good feeling to get all that. You know, I take a look at this guy and he drives me kind of crazy watching this guy. I'm like, well, I can see why he's driving me crazy. I recognize it.
Right. You know, for you, the line of, you know, of who you are versus who you want to be, and this concept of restarting when you're 50 years old. I mean, that's something when you talk about, you know, reflection or looking inward to see what you've accomplished in your life, what you wish that you accomplished in your life. I mean, these are threads and trends that are relatable to everyone who's going to sit in those audiences.
Yeah.
Is that by design?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think he embodies something that I see in some of my friends, a feeling of being stuck, unable to move off of a certain point and get on with the next phase of your life. You know, and it's more obvious in some friends of mine, but the fact of the matter is we all deal with that. We're always trying right. to get ourselves unstuck and off that spot where we've stranded ourselves for a while. And particularly if circumstances like a divorce or, you know, he's got a teenage kid who he's having a hard time relating to. As those things start to pile up, moving past that stuck point can become a real problem.
And I mean, that's the real treasure of the theater in the way that you can write a play and really take 2.5 hours to break down that concept and really make people think about their own lives by watching Wheeler on stage trying to figure out his.
Yeah. You know, even as we've done this thing just for staff and designers, I've already had a number of men come up to me and admit to me, I recognize that guy. I recognize that behavior. It can be kind of embarrassing, actually, a little painful.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine. You know, you said in one interview, and it's interesting about, you know, opinions and being opinionated. You have this voice. You have this platform in theater to do this. I mean, you're not a guy who spouts off on Twitter about what's happening in politics or, you know, or has an opinion about the latest, issue in America. You save it for the stage. You save it to be your voice on stage. Why is that?
Well, I mean, for one thing, I've got the platform. I get to put up a play at Steppenwolf Theater. I get to write 2.5 hours and actually expect an audience to sit there and listen to what I have to say for 2.5 hours. It's quite an expectation. Mm-hmm. It would be a little unseemly to ask them, oh, in addition to that, also read my daily thoughts and musings on my meal or politics or the last bad movie I saw.
But there's something to be said. I'd love to know what you're eating for breakfast. You know, like a Tracy Letts Twitter account would be a fun thing to pay attention
to.
Yeah,
I keep threatening to do it. My wife tells me, she encourages me to do it, and I'm just like, you know, it would drive me crazy. You know, I would just get mad.
Tracy Letts is my guest tonight. He's the award-winning playwright and actor. His new show, Linda Vista, directed by Dexter Bullard, is at Steppenwolf. Previews begin next Thursday and run through May 21st. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, get the news from Rob, and we'll continue our conversation with Tracy Letts here on The Download. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio tonight at the big table, Tracy Letts, the Pulitzer Prize-winning, Tony Award-winning playwright, actor. He's got a new show, Linda Vista, which is making its world premiere at the Steppenwolf. Previews next Thursday, runs through May 21st. He's my guest tonight. You know, as we talk about Linda Vista, you talk also about The Minutes, which is the next play, which is already penciled in for Broadway. How does that work? I mean, the concept that you're already aware that project is going to go to the next step, because I think a lot of people who pay attention to theater, even, you know, on the peripheral, will be like, oh, it has to do well to go to Broadway.
I I don't know. I don't know how it happened. I wrote the play. I didn't even email it out. I went to the theater and made some copies of it and handed it around to a few people. And a couple of days later, I was in Sardi's meeting with a New York producer. Talking. I mean, it's not the way it normally goes. So I don't know how it happened. It just came together very quickly.
That's not the blood, sweat, and tears story that we want to hear from the playwright. Climbed up. I was trying so many rehearsals, and we got there. We finally got there.
No,
you just copied. You used a copy machine. You got to play. That's great. Well, I mean, for you, I mean, take us to the experience of having your work on the Broadway stage. I mean, for you to be a Chicagoan, an ensemble member at Steppenwolf, to have success with even your earliest work, and of course, August Osage County. Talk about what that's like for you as an artist to have your work, critically acclaimed here in Chicago, but to then move to the next level.
Totally unexpected is what it was like. I mean, we put up August Osage County 10 years ago this summer, actually. It was in 2007, and my agent, who lives in New York, came to see the show, and we went out afterward to talk about the play, and the first thing he said was, "That's a Broadway show." And I thought he was insane. I said, "No, it's not. It's 3.5 hours long. It's three acts. It's got 13 actors in it. There's no way it's a Broadway show." Well, he was right. I was wrong. It was totally unexpected for me. It's great. It's the greatest thing. When you're part of Broadway, you feel like there's a kind of festival atmosphere because there just aren't that many theater, you know, maybe 30 theaters and maybe only 5 or 10 straight plays, non-musicals,
right,
on Broadway. And so it's a lot of fun to be able to share your work with not just the New York audience, but the tourist audience that's coming in there. It's a lot of fun.
The collaborative experience that you talked about at the beginning about Chicago, does that remain when you take it to Broadway? Do you find the same sort of collaborative spirit taking place on stages there?
Well, it's been the same for me because I've been able to take it with me. You know, we took our original cast from August.
Which is not usual. And that's no, highly unusual.
Right. And we took our original cast from Superior Donuts as well. And then the two shows I've acted in on Broadway, one was Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, and our cast was intact from that. And another one kind of got remade on the road. But I've been able to keep that ensemble spirit with me. Not a lot of star vehicles. But again, that's one of the great things about Chicago theater. We don't – there are economic reasons for it. We don't have a star system in this city. New York does. You know, New York values a star. They always have, and they always will. It's part of the deal. And if you can put Tom Hanks or Al Pacino in your show, you're going to sell a lot of tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Here we do something different. We create a different kind of experience. And so to be able to take that work from Chicago and feel like an ambassador from this city exhibiting our work in New York, it's been fantastic.
You know, you've mentioned your life in the way that you've been on Broadway both as a playwright and an actor. You talk about that relationship you have in the skill set that you've developed, to be able to write plays and to act in plays. There's not a lot of times you see that sort of combination. Where does that come from, and how does one work off the other?
Man, I've always done both since I was a teenager. My careers have often been on parallel tracks. I've never mixed the two. I've never been interested in writing stuff for me to act in or acting in stuff that I've written. It's just never been I don't think I'd do either job as well if I were trying to do both at the same time. And I've just been really lucky that I've been able to do them and to do them on Broadway and stuff like that. I'm sure they do inform each other. I mean, I'm sure that just all the time I've spent in rehearsal rooms and on stages in my life, I think that probably the language of theater, the rhythm of theater, something about it is just...
You can learn from yourself.
It's part of my cellular makeup now. It's just who I am. I get what the rhythm of that is. And so I think sometimes it is a little easier for me to write for an actor because I'm out there as an actor myself and I know the stuff that's fun for an actor to do. And sometimes I think as an actor... I'm reminded of those moments that I'm sitting in the audience as a writer, as a playwright, pulling my hair out because the actors won't just get to the point. Right. So when I'm on stage, well,
that's
the
good.
Actor,
yeah.
Like, okay, maybe I'll just get
you
to the point.
The other side of you can be critical of the other. That's good, right?
Right.
In the moment. You know, for you, I mean, it goes beyond the stage. I mean, as an actor, you find yourself in Homeland or Divorce or in the movie coming up here, The Lovers. I mean, talk about that experience, because that's a different kind of acting. I mean, it's not a given that because you're a successful actor on the stage in front of an audience interacting on a given night, that you're a natural for a different type of show without an audience in the room where you're just, you know, doing your lines to a camera.
Yeah, no, I would say I'm definitely not a natural at that. In fact, I mean, I've acted on stages my whole life, but I've not done a lot of film and TV work until a few years ago. It was when I did Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf on Broadway, and Alex Gonza, the creator of Homeland, saw the show and called me and asked me to play that part on Homeland. And I actually turned him down at first because I had read the script and it was just, you know, it was a big committee meeting and it was a jerk in a three-piece suit. I thought, I don't want to be this guy. But Alex was he's a very smart man, and he's got a very smart television show, and he called and explained what he wanted to do with the character, and there was a longer view, and I always admired the way the show kept, you know, it's a spy show on TV, but it also keeps one foot in the real world, and I right. really appreciated that about it. So I'm so glad I did it. It was a great experience. They're all great people, and I learned so much. I learned so much about acting for the camera, being able to be a series regular on Homeland, just going in day after day.
Do you feel, you know, as an actor and a writer who, you know, every single play that you do, you already talked about how you love the process and you love growing and trying. So you're such diverse in your canon of work. Do you, when you have a role like the role you had in Homeland and the experience of doing something different with your acting expertise, do you want to do it more? Do you say to yourself, I want to try this again. I want to push it a little bit further. I want to try something that I've not tried before.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the great things about this coming at this time in my life, in my 50s, that I'm suddenly able to do this work on camera, is that it scares the hell out of me. I love being able to do something that's so scary. And it's a new skill to learn. You know, being able to work on Homeland with Claire Danes and Mandy, I mean, they have very different ways of working. They're both great actors. And to be able to just observe them. You know, also, there's a lot of value in having the gig. You know, you're not just a day player who's thrown out there for one day,
right,
expected to deliver and then go away. It's like, oh, no, I've got the gig. I'm not only on this episode, I'm going to be on the next episode. So I can relax a little bit. I can just relax and get to know people, start to learn names and people in the hair and makeup trailer, and ask Claire and Mandy questions about the way they're working. Very different ways of working, and get to sit there and observe them day in and day out. It's a great, great way to learn it.
Tracy Letts, my guest in studio. He's a playwright and actor. Linda Vista is on stage starting next week at the Steppenwolf. Runs through May 21st. You know, before we wrap up, a lot of your career has been about adapting your work to film. August, Osage County, Killer Joe, even in a way, Superior Donuts to TV. Talk about that process. I mean, that's a process that is different. I mean, I would assume that that's a little less collaborative moving into a different medium. Has that been a smooth transition for you to be able to take the words to stage and transfer them to a different medium?
There's nothing smooth about that. There's nothing smooth about it. It's not natural to take something that was written for the stage and to put it on TV or on film. It's a very unnatural thing to do. And of course, the hierarchy in film and TV is so much different than the theater. The play, the writer is so much further down on the list. So no, it's not natural at all. Having said that, I grew up in a small town in Oklahoma, and I would not have had access to things like Streetcar Named Desire or Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf were it not for
right.
the movies. And so I when I do that, I think about some kid in some small town somewhere who might like access to something like Killer Joe or Bug or August, that it might speak to them, but they're not going to get a chance to see it on stage. And so that's why it has value for me. Even something like Superior Donuts, which, you know, I don't actually have anything to do with. I didn't make the TV show, but, you know, that Superior Donuts has a real sweet spirit about it. And, I'm glad that people elsewhere in the country are getting a chance to experience some flavor of that.
This is a new chapter for Tracy Letts in the way that some of your characters and your storylines and your plays are just bought outright to say, hey, we like that process. We want to make this a sitcom. Are you comfortable? Are you comfortable with a CBS sitcom being called Superior Donuts? People going, oh, that's Tracy Letts. And it's Judd Hirsch and it's actors and people doing sitcom-y type things with the dark and stormy playwright that we love so much, Tracy Letts.
Well, clearly I am comfortable with it because you can watch it on CBS on Monday nights. I tried to turn Superior Donuts into a sitcom after I thought, there's nothing wrong with the form of a sitcom. I thought I'll try and do it myself. And I spent some time, I had it set up at a couple of different networks. I wrote different versions of the pilot, and I can't write that way. I can't write in the way modern sitcoms are written. But a guy I had been working with out in Los Angeles, who had helped me set up a lot of that, he said, do you mind if I try? And he's a nice guy. He had worked hard on the thing. And I said, no, go for it. So he's the one who actually got it together, and he hired some writers, and lo and behold, there it is on CBS. And I wish him the best. I don't have anything to do with it, but I got no problem with it being on TV.
For you, I mean, you've got this play that starts next week. You've got The Minutes, which will be in the next year's Steppenwolf season. When you talk about these projects and the projects of whether it be an HBO Divorce or whether it be The Lovers, Deborah Winger, or trying to make a sitcom, right. You have so many things going on. What are the things that you want to do now that you're 51 years old that you haven't been able to do so far?
I don't know that there's anything I want to do that I haven't been able to do so far. I know that the more I do this, the more I really like being a playwright in the room while a new play is being made. I think that's probably my favorite process. It's where I'm most comfortable. So I'm having a great time. I've had a great time putting up Linda Vista. I'm looking forward to The Minutes. And as long as I got stories to tell and people want to come to the theater to hear them, I'll keep writing them.
Do you feel, it's interesting, I think about actors and playwrights, especially award winners. You think that, Tracy Letts, he can do whatever he wants, whenever he wants. There's a lot of rejection, even in the business of being in a position where you have, had such success. How do you sort of navigate that? The idea that it isn't just sort of pie in the sky, easy street for Tracy Letts, even though you've had so much success in the past.
Well, it would be churlish of me to complain at all about anything because I've been given a lot of opportunities and I feel very, very lucky. Rejection's a part of this business. It's a big part of the business. And truth is, if you can't toughen up to it, you're out of the business a lot earlier than where I am right now. I mean, I never made any money in this business until I was in my 40s, until August Osage County. So, and that's all right, because I was loving what I was doing. I was loving making theater here in Chicago. I've always loved it. So, and I've gotten to travel places and meet fantastic people, and I love my work. So that was never a problem for me. So, rejection, it's just part of the job description.
Tracy Letts, playwright, actor, award winner. His play, Linda Vista, is starting previews next Thursday. It'll be on stage at the Steppenwolf through May 21st. Tracy Letts, thanks so much for being my guest tonight. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Justin.
We could have gone another hour with Tracy Letts, right? The question I had, and now we'll get it. That's the great thing about The Download, right? We'll get him again.
It's great.
I'm interested because over time, if you're a fan of Tracy Letts, you know his work from when he first started, Killer Joe, Bug. Those were really intense, dark, if not like almost, I don't want to use, I'm, the word's not the right word, dirty, but just gritty.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. That's
and
they, a good word.
There's a lot of people, and I was reading a great article with Anna Shapiro. It's like, I didn't like Killer Joe. Like, they were friends at that time, and she didn't like it. There's a lot of people that it's kind of like, he even says himself, he's like, his first play, it was sort of 50-50. But those plays were a certain style of angst and anger and darkness, and it's changed in a way. You know, it's from almost, as he's getting older, like the the sort of emotion that he puts into the play, even it sounds like with this play, it's changed a little. It's been more reflective. It's not as dark and angst-driven as the earlier stuff. That's the next time. Chapter 2. Act 2. Tracy Letts. It's good to talk to him, though. Yeah. Right?
I know.
Always fun. All right, coming up, we'll get an update on tonight's news. Rob Martier and Amara Enya and Mario Smith in studio to reload the week that was. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, what a week to reload. Woo!
Yes.
312-981-7200 if you want to get in on the conversation. We are reloading this week's news. We got the biggest stories, overreported, underreported, winners, losers, which story suck you down the rabbit hole, and which story will we remember in 5, 10, 50, 500 years from now? Amara Enya in studio, a public policy consultant and a regular here on the download. Good to see you.
Good to be here.
And also Mario Smith. Mario, of course, a longtime poet in town and the host of News from the Service Entrance, which you can hear Thursdays at 2 o'clock on Lumpin Radio. Mario, good to see you, bud.
Man, it's good to be seen. Can you dig it?
I know that you have documented many times your fear of bridges.
Didn't
on the
do
show.
It tonight either.
How did you get to the studio?
I got a cab.
There you go.
From
not
Randolph.
Walk across the bridge.
No,
here
it was too windy. If it wouldn't have been so windy, I might have tried it tonight. Because this afternoon, I'm like, nice. Yeah, it's great outside. And then it's winter again. So, nah.
Maybe we'll do a download-sponsored video for your first walk across the bridge.
Yeah, you know. It'll have to be all sponsored. Right. I'm going to have to get some cash.
Amara, let's start with you. Yes. I think we all know what the biggest story of the week was, probably biggest story of the month. But why don't we get right into the healthcare vote or non-vote today? What do you think?
Well, I definitely thought that was the biggest story of the week, of the month, of the presidency, of the first 64 days of this president's term. I was kind of predictable. I thought it was interesting how after yesterday when they pulled the vote and then the president resorted to basically threats to try to get the support on the Republican side that he needed to pass what was supposed to replace Obamacare. But the interesting thing is that this was all on the Republicans. The Democrats really didn't have anything to do with this, but it was the Republicans that came out in full force and did
not. Do you
not
find it interesting
it.
That they became the scapegoat in a way? Donald Trump tonight talking to the New York Times and to Twitter and other places and to the press saying, Democrats didn't vote for it. I mean, really kind of putting it on the Democrats?
Yeah, no, I wasn't surprised at all. In fact, there was an article that just came out in The Atlantic with President Trump basically absolving himself of any responsibility or accountability for the failing of this bill and trying to throw it to Democrats. He said basically it's everyone else's fault except his. And I thought that was amusing, but this is par for the course for this president.
Right.
So it didn't surprise me that he attempted to use the Democrats and say it's their fault, but this was completely with the Republicans.
Mario, you have this as well as the biggest story of the week.
Oh, yes, I do.
You got a big smile on your face.
I'm very happy.
What makes you happy about this?
Well, I don't want to spike the football quite yet because he's still the president. But what makes me happy more than anything is that he went on a 2.5-year tirade with the first topic of conversation being on day one, we're going to get rid of Obamacare. It's going to go away. We're going to get rid of it. And he kept emphasizing. That's a terrible Trump impression.
Yeah,
I'm
good.
Sure I could do better if I was, you know. But anyway, this was the foundation of his campaign was getting rid of Obamacare. It's terrible. It's not terrific. It's not bigly. It's bad. It's a bad hombre. All of that stuff. And then for him today to be like, oh, well, you know, hey, it's cool. I didn't really care.
Well, there's something, and he said it as well in the press conference about, you know, he thinks it would be politically savvy in a maneuver to let Obamacare fail.
It's not going to fail, though. I think the problems that Obamacare contains, and there are several, having had to use some of that coverage recently and find out that I wasn't as covered as I thought, they could have solved this problem
just by reaching out to a couple of Democrats and saying, look.
But even the president, as he was leaving office, he offered to assist with making the necessary modifications to the Affordable Care Act.
President
Obama. And that was rejected by this president. So there are tweaks that could have been made.
And Speaker Ryan saying today as well that this is this is so flawed we can't even look at this.
But President Obama went as far as to tell Donald Trump the day they met, like, you know, there's some things with Obamacare that aren't correct. You should try to get them fixed and move on. And he's like, I won't. I'm not listening to you.
I think it was really interesting in this process and a process that almost became the rabbit hole story for me, getting into trying to understand what the Affordable Care Act was, find out what the American Health Care Act is.
Or as we call it, AHA.
but it's interesting. I mean, the argument really all boils down to there are some in Congress on the conservative side that do not believe that the government should be in any business when it comes to universal health care. And that's sort of stopped the idea that this didn't go far enough to give the power back to insurance companies to say, this is private market. We shouldn't be in this game. Everyone's survival of the fittest.
Right. I think just from an economic standpoint and just in terms of how the modifications or this new Trump care, as I'll call it, even though Trump is avoiding attaching his name to it. But it really, this was about understanding how do we feel about profits, especially for insurance companies, about market-based healthcare? And quite frankly, I actually thought that this sent a strong signal about maybe the fact that we should have pushed for single-payer option from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's an opening, especially on the left, that we could actually leverage now with the failing.
Do you feel that there is any leverage on the left for Democrats or others to step up and say, hey, we've got a way to fix Obamacare. Here's our plan. At this juncture to the American people?
Absolutely. I think that because we all knew that there were issues with Obamacare as it existed, this is an opportunity now to make those improvements that President Trump should have been open to when President Obama was leaving office. Now they can make some of those adjustments to make it something that we can be even more satisfied with, because a lot of people, even on the Democratic side, weren't really satisfied.
All right, Mario,
with it.
Big political question.
Yes, sir.
Does this, as President Trump predicted and others are dancing around in the media and on the left, does this predict discontent in a voter who voted for Donald Trump, who voted for Republicans, who may be thinking about the next House race in 2018?
Well, I think that depends on which particular faction of voter you're talking about. If you're talking about somebody that absolutely believes every word he says, it probably doesn't do anything because he's already taken he won't take blame for it. So he's taken all the light for those folks off of him and put it on Ryan. The Democrats,
but some of those House Republicans who stood in the way of Donald Trump, they might become Trump may say to them come election time in 2018, you know, you don't have my support.
Oh, he won't support.
He's already threatened, though, that those who did not get behind the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, he's already threatened them.
Do you think
with
that's real? Do you think that's something that will play out in 2 years?
Yeah, it's real because he's petty. Of course,
maybe
it's real. Of it is real. It's as real as Breitbart, right after this happened, went right on their website saying that Ryan should be removed.
But I suspect that a lot of Republicans probably aren't quite as concerned, especially as they see how things turn out. It might not be a bad thing as we head into the midterms for them to not have President Trump's support.
But, you know, I always wondered, even when he was running, how he would be able to govern with even though he has the majority of everything in the executive and the legislative branch, there's still a ton of Republicans in the House and in the Senate that don't like him.
Well, I think you're learning, and I think we all are learning along with him that, you know, it'll be it's not going to be as easy as one party rule, especially when you talk about the entrenched interests in Washington.
See, Justin, it's real easy when you can do a 22-minute show and take commercial breaks and have your superstars tell you what they did for charity when you send them out in the field to get Cambodian milk.
Mario Smith, Amara Enya, in studio tonight. We're breaking down the week that was. Reloading the news, 312-981-7200 if you want to get into the action. We'll come back. We'll do overreported and underreported. Lots to talk about tonight on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here at 720 WGN. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. Amara Enya, Mario Smith in studio. We just did the biggest story, of course, which was the healthcare debacle today, the pulling of the vote. Let's go to overreported and underreported. We'll probably just get to overreported. We'll do underreported after the news. But overreported, let's start. I mean, I it's so amazing to me. And every time we do this segment, I'm like, that happened this week? But yes, the House Intelligence Committee hearings that were broadcast live.
It was great.
we got a steady dose of intelligence briefings and whether or not an espionage and Russian connections at the beginning of this week. And Amara, you have that for overreported.
I definitely had that for overreported. So it was funny, last Sunday I was doing another political analysis show, and we were talking about who was going to watch the House the Comey hearings versus who is going to watch the Supreme Court confirmation
hearing
for
same time,
Gorsuch.
Right, right.
Exactly. And I was the only one that was going to watch the Gorsuch Supreme Court hearing. Everyone else was watching Comey, not because they were really interested in anything that he had to say, but because they were hoping for something explosive and something to be revealed that had never been revealed throughout the course of the campaign and up until now. So I thought the story was overreported. I don't know that we really learned anything new about the relationships with Russia or who knew what in our and
the takeaway being the only takeaway that was from that was that the FBI is looking into it, and you're like, well,
right.
I thought that was already happening.
Exactly.
And secondly, not that big of a bombshell that they would. It'd be a bombshell if they weren't
right at this point.
What do you think? I mean, you had that as well. The Nunez, you were talking more about the, and then the subsequent running to the president with the information and whether or not that was
you
out
said
of bounds.
You said daddy wrong. He ran to his daddy.
But yeah, but I mean, that was a strange moment. Much ado about nothing, but a strange moment.
I think we learned exactly where, because even President Trump, even President Trump said today about loyalty. I think we learned where the loyalties lie. Even when they, if you go back, and I will get back to it, even when you go back to the whole Muslim ban thing, when they were in the circuit court, and it was partisan questions. You know, and even with this hearing with Comey, there were questions more about, well, who said
who
the leaks?
And
then
this,
it was like, well, you know, whatever for the leaks. I think, first of all, I think that Representative Nunez needs to recuse himself, step away from that, because now he's kind of soiled it anyway. And I think the mere fact, I've never, ever heard of that happening before, where he immediately was like, wait a minute, incidental phone calls, I've got to go tell the president. And it's like a Marvel comic.
Yeah.
He runs to the White House full speed. He's like, Mr. President, oh God, I'm out of breath.
Papers flailing everywhere.
Right. I found two phone calls that happened after the time you said you were wiretapped. This is really a joke at this point. Yeah. And I watched every second of it. When they took a break, I took a break. I watched it all. Because when I was a little kid, I watched the Watergate. I watched the Watergate hearings, and I was so compelled to just stay locked in that. And the same thing with this. This is an important, first of all, we're talking about treason. I think so.
I try to be as objective as possible.
Oh, I don't.
I wonder. I know. I'm just saying. I wonder if this is an overblown kind of thing, because yes, I can. I'm starting to be able to, through the media, piece together that there are probably some people in the Trump campaign, not Trump.
Yeah, I don't think Trump's in any of that.
Were doing things that they probably shouldn't have, and consequently were fired for it or whatever. At a certain point, I mean, I think the outcome's going to be a slap on the wrist. I'm not sure that you're at the level of the T word, treason.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't much that was revealed through the hearings that we didn't already know, and so much about it is speculation. I think what's happening here is just the allure of the Russian spy narrative, and I think that's what's driving a lot of the interest around this story. And the reason why this story continues to live, even after we're not really getting that much new information. So I thought it was very overreported. Yeah. The hearing, I did listen into some of the Comey hearing, and you know, he was very,
you guys both listened to the hearing, huh?
Absolutely.
I did. I took a break from the Gorsuch hearings, yes.
Every
second.
Well, okay.
I didn't listen to every second.
Let's get more controversial.
Last thing I was going to say was, I don't disagree that it was overreported, but in my experience in life, where there is smoke, there is always a fire. There's never just smoke. And I can wait. I'm patient. It's coming.
Right, let's move to the more controversial overreported. Amara has on her list Chance the Rapper at Lollapalooza.
You about to get
you said that's overreported.
I know.
What's your take on this?
Well, I mean, I was ecstatic that he was at Lollapalooza. In fact, I know many people who attempted to get tickets and did not get tickets. That day was sold out within minutes. But I just thought it was all over the place, and you know, I guess I was pretty ambivalent about it.
I don't agree with you.
Although I do.
What's your take, Mario? I mean, there is something to be said about. I mean, my take. I'll say as a Chance fan, and I saw him at Pitchfork, just really follow his career. It does. I mean, it's amazing to see his name to be the first name on the Lollapalooza poster. That means headliner. Yeah. That's usually where you're putting the Guns N' Roses,
right?
Metallica reunion. You know, Chance the Rapper. I mean, that Outkast. He's at that level. As a fan, I'm really happy for him, but I'm also like, I feel like we skipped a couple spots.
Yeah, and I wonder if it isn't just riding the wave, because he has been out front. I mean, this has been a groundbreaking year
Grammys.
For him.
Won the Grammys. I mean, it's amazing.
Exactly. He's been winning awards. Plus, there's that hometown pride, right? And he's really doing something that not a lot of artists are able to do, which is to continue to be independent, but also to reach this level of success. So I feel like some of this might be just riding the wave from a fantastic year for him.
I am 1,000,000% biased when it comes to Chancellor Bennett, man. First of all, I believe, and the experience that I've had with his mentor, Mike Hawkins, brother Mike, I've had a chance to kind of watch him be a kid. That whole 10-day EP he dropped when he got suspended or detention or whatever it was, and to this man that's a father, to this dude that basically went to the governor and was like, do your job. I think he speaks for a lot of everyman people that want to say things like that to people in power. I think when he... I kind of saw the Lollapalooza thing happening, though, because he didn't announce Chicago on his tour. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, if he's not playing Lollapalooza, he's going to probably play Pitchfork. And it's Lolla. And it's at home. And it's a bus ride away from his house.
Absolutely.
And it was overreported because, again, you're talking about, you know, there's only like two things happening on Earth. It's either something in music or Donald Trump. So I love the fact that a really good dude is getting a chance to get his moment. These moments are fleeting, so you know
it's a major moment.
And not to mention, you know, I think he does something to the population here in this city, particularly for older folks. It's like, look at that boy there, look at him.
He's rather inspiring. Yeah, no, there's
rather
a sense
inspiring.
Of pride about it. I mean, here's a young guy. I mean, he's very young, but he is stepping out. He's taking initiative. And he's doing it on his own terms as well.
And I mean, in this city, you've got people like Common with the Common Foundation. Kanye still does his thing with Donda's House. Shay, Rhymefest. You know, there are people who do stuff, but I don't think any of us has seen anybody do it with the whole kind of drive that Chance does it.
Well, I will say, though, I think, again, part of it might be just the moment that we're in. And him, this is a spark, right? So he's been able to capitalize on this moment, because there are artists, just like you mentioned, who are doing phenomenal work.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're artists, athletes, other people who are public figures, who are doing amazing work in our communities and amazing work around the city.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this isn't their moment. This is Chance's moment.
And I think
he's capitalizing on his moment.
Mario Smith in studio tonight. We're reloading this week's news. We'll come back. We'll do tonight's news with Rob.
And then we'll come back. Okay?
I know, right? I know. And then we'll come back and do underreported winners and losers coming up after the 9 o'clock news. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight, reloading this week's news, Amara Enya, public policy consultant and regular here on the download. Good to see you.
Good to be here.
And of course, Mario Smith, poet and radio host of News from the Service Entrance, which you can hear Thursdays at 2 o'clock on Lumpin' Radio.
Lumpin' Radio. Great place. I'm having fun, man.
Great, good.
I'm having a ball.
Good.
Absolutely.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's open up, before we go to our underreported stories, let's clean up some of the comments and texts from the biggest story, which was about healthcare. Let's go to Jim in Elgin, in South Elgin. Jim, what do you think? How you doing, man? What do you think of what happened today?
Well, I think, first of all, the Affordable Care Act is anything but affordable. Okay. I happen to be a dentist, and I've had a lot of people that lost their jobs because of Obamacare, because the work week got redefined, you know, down to under 30 hours unless you wanted to go into Obamacare. Half of my employees have seen their deductibles go through the roof or the premiums, so they are without insurance now. And, you know, if
Obamacare didn't do that. Businesses did that because they wanted to avoid paying for it. Obamacare was designed a certain way, and now they did it where they – I understand what you're saying, but let's make it clear. That was not a mandate from the health insurance that was offered by the government. It was a way that private businesses got around having to give their employees ACA. Go ahead.
Well, guess what? When you can't afford it, that's what happens.
Okay.
So the thing is, you know, if they want to be serious about, you know, fixing health care, what they should do, first of all, the price of health care, a lot of it is artificially high because of lawsuits.
Right.
And in Texas, about 12 years ago, they put a cap on non-economic damages, tort reform. And so what that allows doctors to do is stay in business and not get malpractice,
right,
you know, sued or costed out of business.
That's not, you know, a good, that's,
Illinois,
that's a strong point.
A lot of OBGYNs left Illinois because they can't afford the malpractice premium.
Right.
And in Texas, they fixed that. So guess what? A lot of doctors move to Texas, and guess what? The marketplace takes over. People can shop around and find a better price for things like that, unless it's an emergency. And this is part of what needs to be done on a national basis. And that's actually something Trump wants to do in the so-called phase three.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Jim. Thanks for that. I appreciate that. Jim makes a good point, only in the sense that it seems like there's a lot of economic factors working around the idea of accepting universal health care. And that is something, whether it's the insurance companies not wanting to, they want to make more money. And Kitty Kurth was on talking about that last week, and Touche, the idea they don't make enough money. That's why they're bounding out of these projects. Mm-hmm. Or if it's someone who's a small business who can't afford the ACA mandated coverage, so they change the way that people work.
I have a question real quick, and you guys probably know more about this than I do, but a lot of people, I'm sure, are wondering, how is it that Canada, much of Europe, Cuba, and all these other places have more than affordable health care? In fact, it's part of the mandate. Why? I mean, I know it's big pharma and things like that, but wouldn't it be, if Obamacare is so awful and horrible, wouldn't it be in everybody's interest? I'm a dummy. But wouldn't it be in everybody's interest to assure that everybody that lives here had adequate health care?
Well, I mean, you just heard what Jim said. I mean, the one thing which is, I think, is I've heard from doctors, and I try to be objective in it, is that a lot of times because of the way that the insurance was kind of, it became very difficult to do your practice. Mm-hmm. So as he just mentioned, doctors are leaving Illinois to go to other states in which it was more lenient, meaning tort reform is an issue that, you know, if you are wronged by your doctor, you can sue the doctor. If the doctor loses, it could mean their practice.
Right.
And
they
pay the premium on the insurance of that.
Right.
And that's a lot of money. So they're like, I wish I was in a situation where I couldn't get sued. There's probably a lot of businesses that wish that.
Yeah, no, I mean, the caller is actually very right, very correct. Tort reform has been a long-standing issue, particularly for people going into the medical field, because it is high risk, right? And so you do have doctors, for example, in Illinois leaving to neighboring states that don't have the same structure set up, because it does become something you have to consider if you're going into the medical field, and it does drive up costs. It's the reason why, even with hospitals, when they talk about how they prescribe and the kinds of tests that are done to avoid lawsuits, right? So this is a major issue. I think it's a little bit separate from your question, Mario, as it relates to why other countries like Canada, European countries, are able to offer more universal health care and we're not able to do it here in the United States. I think it's partly a cultural thing. Mm. So in those countries, they've actually accepted the notion that it is in everyone's interest to have access to health care, but they're also paying a significantly higher tax rate, right? So if you live in the UK,
you're paying for it in income tax or property tax, or you're paying for it in a different way. We, as in America, have chosen that's not one of the priority things. I mean, that schools are one of our priorities. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't think that in the state of Illinois, but that's in the there's a couple other things that, you know, that we have decided that our tax money goes to and is prioritized to. Healthcare was never
healthcare
one of them.
Is not. And the Republicans, quite frankly, don't believe that it's the government, or many don't believe that it's the government's role to be the one to offer health care.
Not to mention the GOP has been steadfast in trying to derail any kind of health care since the Nixon administration. And that's all documented stuff.
It's, so. I mean, there's at least they're consistent.
You did?
I will say that in a way that they say that the ideology of the party, or of someone who is more fiscally conservative, is this is a capitalist society.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Survival of the fittest, and the people, the market wins. And yeah. Some things we cannot regulate by the government. I don't know if I agree with that necessarily, because you see that with what the problems that causes in sort of basic needs, mm-hmm. and schooling, mm-hmm. and other things, mm-hmm. Infrastructure, yes. and even healthcare. That you know, sometimes we need the government to regulate it so it doesn't just run away and the consumer is the one left holding the bag.
Right.
All right, Amara, we didn't mean to do all of that.
I think we went into the rabbit hole.
We rabbit holed. let's stay on time. So what we're going to do? We'll take a quick break and we'll come back and we will do the underreported stories, and then we've got winners and losers coming up here. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. This week too.
Yeah. A week ago.
And then Chuck Barris, like a couple days after that.
Yeah.
Gong Show, Chuck Barris.
Yep.
Chuck Berry, man. Chuck Berry was a baller. He cared not. He gave absolutely none of them.
He really did.
At all.
The Chuck Berry photos that have been emerging from like the late 70s, mm-hmm. Chuck Berry, very strange.
Yeah, man. Had the perm, had the big leather coat, the bell bottoms.
That was kind of like...
Yeah, and there's a picture I saw on Facebook, I think yesterday, where he's like... essentially going big mouth kiss on Janet Jackson.
Yeah,
as a kid.
Yeah, man. She's a child.
Yeah.
It's like dude.
There's like younger Michael Jackson and younger Janet Jackson, and just like strung out Chuck Berry, like going for a full mouth kiss.
I want you. Yeah. Maybelline,
anyway,
come here.
All right. That's not one of the maybe that is the underreported story of the week. 312-981-7200. Mario Smith, Amara Enya in studio tonight. Let's talk underreported. You mentioned earlier, Amara, the Supreme Court hearing.
Yes.
For Neil Gorsuch. I'm not a big fan of guys named Neil. So that's one of my best friends is Neil, but I'm just like, I don't know if I want a judge to be named Neil. That's what I give to this story.
But the criteria that we use to vet our Supreme Court justice.
Very interesting, because you know, this is a hearing in which Democrats are really kind of on the hot seat. Now, Chuck Schumer has come out and said he's going to filibuster. The Democrats are going to filibuster. But there really is this sort of like they're trying to take the temperature of whether or not their constituents want them to push back on the fact that Merrick Garland was unfairly not confirmed, or even there was no hearing.
Yes.
But it's much more than that, because Senator Franken went on saying that the Roberts Court and the way that it was with Justice Scalia was one of the most corporate-driven, unfriendly to consumers court in American history.
Yes,
that most of the report or the decisions were for the corporation against the consumer, and there's a lot at stake when it comes to someone who is really comes in the same shape, size, and form of a Justice Scalia.
Yes, and so I will say that as a fan of jurisprudence, and this is going back to my law school days. I mean, I was fascinated by the Neil Gorsuch hearings. I mean, it really was, in my honest opinion, just strictly from a jurisprudence standpoint, it was one of the most thoughtful and one of the most informative and well done hearings of this entire presidency.
Aren't they fascinating?
I mean, it was
Supreme Court hearings are fascinating because they're the big ticket questions, and there's a lot going on in there, and there's a lot of reference, and it's really big-minded people talking big-minded things.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and I was, you know, I really appreciate so Neil Gorsuch as a nominee. I mean, he is very thoughtful about how he responded to the questions that were asked. There were a couple of cases that I think spoke to a lot of the apprehension that many on the Democratic side have, especially with regard to a particular case involving a truck driver who ended up, it was a choice between him not driving his truck, and it was icy conditions and endangering himself, and the rights of the company. And so the way that the decision that Gorsuch had, it seemed that he was playing to or favoring the company over the little person. And Feinstein, she asked several questions about how do you feel about the individual, the little person, can we trust that you will speak up for the little person, that our jurisprudence will stand up for people? And I think that's a very big concern, especially considering decisions like Citizens United, which in my opinion is one of the worst decisions to come out of the
courts. A decision that said money can stay in politics.
Money in politics, giving corporations the same rights as as people. And that is one of the, to me, one of the worst decisions that have come out of the Supreme Court in the last 15 to 20 years. And so there was also this issue of around special education. And we just had Andrew V. Douglas was actually decided on the second day of the Gorsuch hearings, which affords students who need, or children who need special needs access, that they have to achieve at the same level as their peers who are in general education. Mm. And Gorsuch was actually criticized for a case in which it seemed that he seemed to be on the wrong side of the special education issue.
He is a buttoned up judge. There's no scandal really in his past, a little bit that fluttered up here and there about some things he said in the classroom. But he's an ideologue who is a traditionalist, if you will. I mean, he interprets the Constitution as it was written.
Yeah.
Kind of a tailor-made judge, conservative judge for a Republican presidency, administration, Congress, Senate. What stands in its way?
Nothing. I think they'll filibuster and that'll be great for the optics. But you know.
Do you think they lose anything to Democrats by going out of their way to try and stop this?
You got to. I mean, they're in a weird position, man, because they, for the last 8 years and for at least until July, they really don't have an edge. So filibustering is their only way to be like, look at us, look at us. The problem, though, is Trump gets to pick at least two. Hopefully, not more than that,
well,
but
we'll
at least two right. Supreme Court justices. And depending on whatever turn this takes in his administration, that could be very detrimental to a lot of Americans.
So two things that I thought were really stood out in these hearings. One is that I thought that the confirmation hearings for Gorsuch really showed that Trump really does not understand the role of the judiciary.
Or anything
I think
else.
That he figured that by nominating this person for the Supreme Court, he believes that the judiciary is supposed to be an extension of the legislative branch or an extension of his political agenda. And if you listen to some of the responses that Gorsuch gave when he was answering some of these questions, he repeatedly stated that, for example, if he was asked to overturn Roe v. Wade, he said he would get up from the table and walk away. He repeatedly stated that his goal is to interpret the law as it is. It is not to make law. It is not to advance any kind of political agenda. And that stands in direct contrast to Trump, who believes that, I'm going to put my guy in.
Well, you just said it. I mean, we said it earlier in this hour, the idea of loyalty and employ, like, that's where he comes from. Mm-hmm. He comes from, I put this person in charge of a project.
Exactly.
They're loyal to me. I pay them.
Exactly. And they'll do it. Right. They'll do what I want.
Right. He doesn't understand the notion of checks and balances, that the judiciary is there
at
to all.
I would say, I would twist it just to say he does understand and he wants it changed. Far too often we say, he's so detailed. What an ignorant. He doesn't know. But I'm like, he knows. He just wants it changed. Mm. All right. Quickly, let's go to our other underreported story. A very, very mysterious, evil story happening in Washington, D.C., Mario, this was your underreported story. 14 girls?
Yeah, well, there have been 501 cases of missing children so far in 2017, and 22 of those cases in Washington, D.C.
What?
And 22, and 22 of those cases are still open. Here's what's happening really quick.
Is it 14 in like a week or
something like that?
I just saw the number 14 over and over and over.
Well, there are a lot of people who are upset that the mainstream media is not covering it. That's not totally true. They are. They're just not giving it the oversaturation that they do everything else. And to those people who are like, they're not covering it, I say You post. You talk about it amongst your friends. You keep that conversation alive on social media.
There's a call for the FBI to get involved. That's
Here's the problem, right. though. We're talking about Jeff Sessions as the attorney general, who you don't want me to go into that. But I don't know what kind of play we get with him and that. There is a school of thought afoot that this is all part of a bigger sex trafficking situation in the United States, which is very real. We're talking 10 to 15 year old girls just missing in one place at one time. And like I said, 501 cases of missing children in Washington, D.C., 22 of those cases are still open. That's 22 too many. Yeah. And I would like, if I could use my bully pulpit, just to demand that people read about the story, Google it, find out about it, check it out.
Very strange
story. Yeah, do your research and then take that research and post.
Do you think it's a political story in the way that the FBI or any other people who might be involved wouldn't get involved because it's not in their I mean, it feels like it's just this human story that there's something is happening in one specific area that is way, way over, you know, where it's happening in other places.
Yeah.
Something should be done.
Something definitely should be done. It's actually an underreported story across the board. I mean, Chicago is actually one of the top, if not the top, mm-hmm. city for sex trafficking in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't really hear about those stories. And so what's happening in D.C. sort of is going under the radar. I think it's going under the radar. I think it's underreported. And I just saw another story about a father and his two sons, who he'd recruited his two sons mm-hmm. to for a sex trafficking
ring. That was here, right?
That was right here in the Chicago area. And so it's just an underreported story overall. I think, unfortunately, because of everything that's happening politically, it tends to overshadow these kinds of stories that whether we're in a political season or not, this is actually happening across the country.
More going on in the world than just what's happening in the Trump administration. Mario right. Smith, Amara Enya in studio tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll get an update from Rob on tonight's news. We'll come back. We'll do winners and losers and which story whipped you down the rabbit hole and what story we're going to remember in 5, 10, 15, 500 years from
Man,
this week.
500 years.
Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, Amara Enya, Mario Smith.
He really is the Velvet Fog. He was there a second ago and then just poof.
You love Rob Martyr. He's got a love interest.
I love Rob Martyr. No doubt. That's my man.
We're breaking down this week's news. We're reloading him. This week's news. We are at winners and losers.
Just want to say I love you guys, too.
Yeah! Rob Martyr said something to me! Yes! Thank you, Rob.
You got a fan down here, Rob.
I know, man. I'm a big fan, too.
There
I really
go.
Am.
The Velvet Fog,
Mutual
baby.
Admiration
Velvet
Society Fog. Here.
He is the voice of WGN at night, son. It don't get much realer. We are all off of topic
man,
right now.
You better stop because I'm about ready to come down there and give you a big old bro hug.
You should come down.
I'm gonna.
I bet you will.
Watch
come
yourself.
On, come on down, man.
I love that voice. It's so
it's the Velvet Fog.
No, I've been enjoying listening to you guys. Good points. It's a lot of fun.
There you go.
Thank
all
you,
right.
Rob.
Take care, guys.
Yes!
You can put that on your in the back of the next book, guys. Rob Martyr likes you. All right.
Scratch that off
let's
the
get
list.
To let's get to winners and losers. We'll go around the horn here. Let's start with winners. I mean, I have Susana Mendoza, the comptroller, Illinois comptroller, only because this week, more than ever, she has stepped up into what was somewhat of a void for Democrat leaders in Illinois, where because of Speaker Madigan or Senate President Cullerton or even the mayor of Chicago, Mayor Emanuel, there's a certain point where you get burnt out on hearing their voices over and over the same thing. Susana Mendoza, just the new comptroller in this year, has started this almost daily kind of attack on Governor Rauner, how he does his business in his office, the expenditures. She was at the City Club making jokes, you know, about his accomplishments. She seems to be in a thorn in the side of the governor, and it kind of needs – it's a shot in the arm that Democrats downstate needed.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, this is the point that I was making earlier, that she has a sort of flexibility that is not afforded to other legislators in Springfield. I mean, she is the comptroller. She's responsible for cutting the checks, not necessarily for deciding
policy.
Around how the budget is allocated. So she has a freedom to be able to critique the governor in a way that other state reps and state senators might not have. The other thing I think that she represents is a departure from to someone to take attention away from Speaker Madigan, for example, who I have to say, even though people might disagree with me, but has been there for 40 years. A lot of the issues that we're facing as a state did not crop up over the last 4 years since
right.
Governor Rauner took office.
You're not going to get a lot of disagreements here.
Which is good to know, because I think I have to keep reiterating that, because you would be under the impression that all of our issues just became issues in 2014. No, our tax issues, these have been issues for decades that were not addressed, and we have a speaker who'd been there for 40 years. So now that they have lost a lot of credibility, Speaker Madigan, Mayor Emanuel, now they need someone, a fresh voice, who can be their proxy, essentially, to carry the narrative now that they've lost some legitimacy.
Sounds like somebody's going to run for governor, my friend.
You know, it's interesting.
Yes. Amara Enya for governor. Here we go. I got you.
Okay.
Let's
really
do it.
There's a lot of people that are after that job right now. We've
Why
seen
not?
Chris Kennedy. We've seen J.B. Pritzker. This week, Daniel Biss, the state senator
this.
Comes in.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mayor Paywar.
Mayor Paywar as well. I'm interested because, you know, you ran for mayor and you were up against big money in, yes. in Mayor Emanuel. And you see here that it's lining up to be a Governor Rauner is going to spend millions. You know, Pritzker and Kennedy are going to spend millions. Do guys like Daniel Biss and Amara Paywar, do they have a chance in a field when there's so much money being thrown around at a state level?
The important thing, the thing that they would have to have, and I don't know because I'm not, it's still early on in the election cycle, but you have to have a message that resonates with people and you have to galvanize people. You can overcome the money deficit if you have a message that resonates. I think Bernie Sanders represented that. There is a strong anti-establishment sentiment that is running through this country. And it's part of the reason why we have a President Trump right now, mm-hmm. even though President Trump represents sort of the negative side of that. But there's a strong anti-establishment sentiment that is about touching the hearts of people and resonating with them that I think can overcome the money component of electoral politics. And so the other candidates who don't have billions of dollars to spend, they have to speak to the hearts of people. They have to have a message that resonates with the people of the state.
Amara Enya, Mario Smith, let's keep going. Let's go winner. Mario, you had a more down-to-earth home field winner, and that's today's weather.
Let me explain, man. Today's
weather could run for governor.
Absolutely. just to go behind the curtain for everybody, we kind of build this in the daytime in the morning. And this morning, it was awesome. It was beautiful outside. Sky was nice and blue, and it was sunny, and it was warm. Walked around for about 3.5 hours, no jacket on. It was great. At 4 o'clock, it changed completely. It's wet. It's damp. It's cold. You cannot say out of your mouth that you love Chicago and not appreciate what happened today with the weather. So if you are walking around.
You love the peaks and the valleys.
Man, how can you not? And even though I'm complaining about how cold it is right now, this is the greatest city in the world, man. This really is. Chicago is
all right,
so dope.
All right, great speech. Let's move on from winners. Let's go to losers. Chicago's a winner. We get it. Chicago's a winner.
What a great
Let's
town.
Go to losers.
I got to go there
sometime. Amara, why don't we start with you, losers.
So the biggest loser or losers that I had this week was related to the 15-year-old freshman that was recorded, gang rape recorded on Facebook. That was a tremendous loss. I think the individuals who recorded and the individuals who watched and the fact that...
Essentially, it was on Facebook Live.
It's on Facebook Live.
And it was a sexual assault
it
that
was an
happening.
Assault.
And in amazing fashion, people watched it and no one reported it.
People watched, no one reported it. And then there were accounts of intimidation for the girl and her family, even now happening after that. And what I heard or what I've been told is that it's attempts to intimidate to keep her from speaking out or revealing the identification of those individuals who are involved in the assault. But the biggest loser, I think, is us. I think it's society. I think it's what kind of society, what kind of people have we become that anyone can watch in real time? This isn't a movie, right? And I think there's something that's happened where you can watch that kind of horrific scene taking place and no one said, let me call the police. No one said, let me, what's happening? And then even reporting it to Facebook. And then the individuals who were involved, who were there, it was disturbing. It says something about
And it's a trend. I mean, we saw that with the assault on the special needs boy out of the suburbs. A couple months ago.
Yep.
But same concept that the people, this is becoming real time entertainment in the strangest way. And it's something that, you're right, I think is reflective of what we set up with social media and our interaction with it.
Exactly. And you got to be some kind of a nut to go on Facebook Live and commit a rape and not know that at some point those faces will be easily identified.
That's the hardest part, man.
What is wrong with you?
The part of this story that is also a head scratcher, and I think it goes to the same part, Amara, is, okay, so you would automatically think, and I'm not trying to get into a criminal's mind, but you would automatically think actually committing a crime, mm-hmm. you would not want to record that and broadcast that to the world. Yeah. And it seems more and more we're seeing that, whether that be gang shootings or whether we see it to be what we saw with the kid from the suburbs or what we just saw in this case, there's a gloating to it. There is a sadistic quality of like, let me press record.
There's a lot to be said for not being stupid. And if you're dumb enough to do that, then I hope they catch each one of them and prosecute them to every inch of the law that will allow it.
Yeah, but people aren't connecting the consequences. I think we have society. I think there's a shift that's taking place where it's seen more as entertainment. Yeah. They're not thinking about, oh, I'm committing a crime. This is an entertainment thing, and the validation or the need for validation via social media, I think, is a lot of what's driving people to record even the most depraved acts because they're still doing it for the attention.
Not to mention, real quick, there are a lot of beefs. A lot of these gang beefs are on social media first, and they start on Instagram and go to Facebook, and then they end up with somebody getting killed.
I think we would save all of the troubles of our world by just getting rid of Facebook.
Okay, man, look, slow down. Okay,
slow down.
Just keep Facebook out of this. No, you got a point.
I got a point.
I think everybody should take a break.
There is something to be said here too. 630 says, you know, I mean, we can talk about the culture part of it, but how about the idea of not raping in the first place?
Do you know
there is something to be said about
for us to say the criminality of it.
Let me bring in Mike because I want to get to one story before we take a quick break here. Mike, this is an underreported story, but it also falls into my loser category. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I thought Colin Kaepernick, I was going to say specifically about the president calling him out by name as is him not being signed. It was somehow something that he had done personally, but that's just a personality trait of the president. But it's Colin Kaepernick and everything that kind of, not only that he represents, but the stories outside of him, like the fact that he's donated, I think it was like 4 tons of food to Somalia. Meals on Wheels. The fact that, hey, you know what? A million people might starve from hunger in the next couple of months is kind of an underreported story.
Right.
That in itself is an underreported story. Yeah. And then on a lighter note, that, hey, you know what? The Bears signed their second backup quarterback, Mark Sanchez, yet. The starting quarterback for San Francisco, Colin Kaepernick, still doesn't have a job, and you wonder why that is.
I
wonder why.
Thanks, Mike.
So I guess it's winners and losers and underreported stories, but it all pretty much orbits around.
Great point. He nails it. And we'll let Mike have that word, and we don't really have to add to that. But it is strange to see that Colin Kaepernick is without a job.
Amazing.
And there are quarterbacks, and I'm nothing against. I'm sure Mark Sanchez is a great quarterback in his form, but the idea that Colin Kaepernick is not getting a job because of his political beliefs, which were pretty benign to begin with.
Can you imagine
kneeling for a national anthem, and then it's a little out of whack.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the horror of seeing someone not stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance or not putting his hand on his heart when there's a picture of Donald Trump at one of the debates just standing there while the pledge is going on when everybody else has their hand on their heart and nobody said a word. And it's the crime in this is, at least from the Bears standpoint, is that Colin Kaepernick's a better quarterback than Mark Sanchez and he should have a job and he doesn't. But Jay Cutler doesn't have a job right now. So what are you going to do?
312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the rabbit hole. Although we kind of done the rabbit hole. I feel like we've really gotten deep on a lot of these stories. But I want to get, of course, which story will be remembered from this week. Coming up here, we're reloading this week's news. Stay with us. Mario Smith and Mara Enya, we're wrapping up this week's reload.
My man.
All right, so we got rabbit hole story, which we had the Supreme Court hearing, we had the House, the Intelligence Committee hearing. The one that I had for rabbit hole story, I read this whole story on the FCC and internet regulation. There has been caps that have been put on by the Obama administration. This is so fascinating to me. They essentially said to AT&T and Verizon and to T-Mobile and those companies, they said, we're going to consider you to be utility companies because you offer internet service. Instead, so now you're more like an energy company or a gas company. You're an internet company.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, you have to protect the private information of Mario's Google searches or they have to protect, that's private information. You're not allowed to sell that. You're not allowed to use it. You're not able to do anything with it because we feel like there needs to be some privacy for consumers. That was passed through the Obama administration. The rule was, if you need to sell, for whatever reason, Mario's Google search
which I don't think you would want to do that.
Or it's not even Google. It's just but the idea of like I shouldn't even say Google. I'm messing up the story. The point being that like just what websites you visited while you were connected to the Verizon network.
Right.
You just have to tell the government you're doing that. There's forms and things like that.
Well, that is regulation. That's what the Trump administration considers to be regulation. They say that it's slowing down business. It's making them not be able to take risks with, or find new business interests with your information. So this week, the regulations have been pulled off because there's a monster lobbying unit for the telecommunications industry in Washington. They're rolling it back, and we're going to back to the George W. Bush rules of the FCC when it comes to internet providers. And I find that to be horrific in a way, because you do feel like that's somewhat of a problem. So that's my rabbit hole. Look it up. It's very interesting. And net neutrality as well. A lot going on there. All right, we got 1 minute, so let's just wrap this up. What story will be remembered from this week, from in 5 years, and 10 years, and 50 years, and 500 years from now? Mario's chopping at the bit. Mario, what story?
The 64-day win streak of Trump not being able to do anything administratively. Trump healthcare fail. Epic fail.
You think there'll be cave drawings in 500 years in space? Or like, remember showing Paul Ryan with a press conference?
Sad-eyed Paul Ryan looking like he's about to cry because his little healthcare didn't happen.
Until Monday. But yeah, maybe. Yeah, right. Until the weekend they start twisting arms. Mario, what do you got?
Well, I would say that was the biggest story of the week. I think Trump care, the failure of Trump care, I think is something that will be remembered long after this week, so that'd be my pick.
Oh, that's good. There's a couple other stories I've gone into the science and nature realm, but I will say I know there's a lot of studies.
Really?
There's some interesting studies. 40% of the households in Chicago. This is amazing to me. Millennial populations. 40% of that population are living at home with their parents.
Whoa.
I'm not surprised. I know many.
Right. But I just think that we will remember this time in our life. Maybe even that study in this week, because the time just goes, oh, you live with your parents till you're 30.
The
life has changed. We've all changed. It's no longer be like, you millennials. It'll just be, that'll be normal. Mm-hmm. And that'll be what you do. Mm-hmm.
Really,
can't wait till you're 30. You're out of the house at 30.
Not at my house.
Really, really, really quick. Tomorrow, Promontory, 5311 South Lake Park. Hashtag Lunchbag Chicago. It starts at 10 a.m. Come and assemble bag lunches for the homeless. Go out in the streets of Chicago right afterwards at noon and distribute the bag lunches for the homeless. Go down. If you want more information, promontorychicago.com.
There you go. Mario Smith, Amara Enyan, thank you so much. Good to see you. We'll see you guys soon.
Peace.
Thank you.
We will give you a beautiful 7 3/4 inch fry pan free of charge.
Are you really so brave? Or are you the one who is afraid? What do you think?
All right, it's time to put Shark Tank Steve Gadlin into the frying pan. That's right. Steve Gadlin's the brain behind a successful local business, I Want to Draw a Cat for You.com. He presented his business idea on the television program Shark Tank, and he snagged Mark Cuban as a principal investor. So now Steve has to go back to Mark Cuban with new ideas. And before he goes into that pressure cooker, he comes to WGN Radio to jump into the frying pan. He's given us his exclusive business idea so we can poke holes in it and give Steve the confidence to pitch it to Cuban himself. Steve Gadlin, welcome back to the frying pan, my friend.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited about doing this tonight, Justin.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. I mean, we changed the format a little bit and went to once a month. So, and the way it worked out, I think we had the car show last time. I just feel like there was a lot more time. You had almost like 6 weeks time here.
Yeah, and that's like, you know, I'm basically like a balloon. And if you think about a balloon over a month, it just gets filled and filled with air until it's ready to burst with good ideas. So it's really to the benefit of your listeners, too, I think.
Okay, yeah, that's how balloons work. So, all right, well, let's get right to it. I guess tonight, what are we gonna talk about? What is your latest invention in the frying pan?
Well, let me tell you something. The other week I was at a pretty popular festival with millenniums called South X, South W. And I went to a few rock and roll concerts, and I tell you, the weather was a little chilly, so a lot of people were wearing gloves on their hands. And here's what would happen. A band would play some great music, and then you'd have all these appreciative millenniums in the audience, and they would try to clap to show their appreciation. But the sound of that clapping was muted, of course, by the glove. Yeah. So what you ended up with were these real awkward pauses after a band played a song of just soft padding. and just real quiet, pat, 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 as all of these millenniums simultaneously patted their gloves together. So what I've invented is something that's going to help them and anyone who goes to a concert in the cold. These are called clappities. And what they are their gloves. There's one for your left hand and one for your right hand. And the glove on your left hand has a thin sheen of flint etched into the outside, and the glove on your right hand has a thin sheen of steel etched into the, you know, above the finger. So you can smack your hands together and actually create a very loud popping noise. That's similar to the sound of naked, fleshy hands clapping against one another. And what it does is, again, it allows you outdoor concerts when you're feeling cold, you want to wear your gloves, you put on your clappities. And people are going to hear you smack your hands together because of the way the flint and the steel operate together when smacked real hard.
Okay, so it's called clappities.
Like clappities, yes.
Clappities.
And you know, the neat thing about that is, of course, the word clap is in it. And then it. And the last part is ease. And we put that in there because of the ease of use. You know, everyone knows how to put on the left glove and the right glove, and everyone knows how to clap. So there's built-in ease to this product. It's the kind of thing someone can pick up and know how to use right away.
Huh. Okay, well, I have some questions. But as we as routine goes, I will defer to the audience because this is really about them giving you constructive criticism so you can workshop this and answer their questions as if you were in a pitch meeting, as if you were on Shark Tank. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number, 312-981-7200. What do we think of the idea clappities? More time, Steve.
Clappities.
Clappities.
Yeah, so again, these are gloves that you can wear when you're at an outdoor concert when it's a little chilly. They keep your hands warm. But because of the flint and steel etched into the material, when you clap your hands, instead of that soft, padding, quiet noise you usually get with gloves, you'll get loud, almost short explosions. Similar to, you know, there's a thing you can buy at the grocery store around the 4th of July called Snap Pops. And you just whip those suckers against the ground, and you get a real, you know, the little flash of flame and a loud pop. Yeah. It's like that times 50 from your hands, you know, and it's just fantastic because it shows the musician that you appreciate, or the comedian, you know, I'm an equal, is equal rights kind of glove, boy comedian, girl comedian, all kinds. And it just shows them that you appreciate what they're doing on stage. And you don't let your appreciation get hindered by your own need for hand comfort on a chilly day.
All right, 312-981-7200. The calls are coming in. Also, the text, 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we will hear from you on what you think of Steve Gadlin's latest invention, clappities, here on the download. It's the frying pan. Stay with us.
We will give you a beautiful 7 3/4 inch fry pan free of charge.
It's the frying pan here on the download, 720 WGN. Inventor Steve Gadlin, who won on Shark Tank with IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. It's an has a development deal with Mark Cuban where he brings new ideas to him. Before he does that, he brings them to us here on the download so we can poke holes in the idea. Tonight's idea, clappities. Steve Gadlin, give us one more elevator pitch on clappities.
Yeah, so clappities are clappities. Gloves. Clappities.
What was I saying? Clappities.
Well, I think we're saying the same thing. We just have different pronunciations, and that's fine. So clappities are gloves that you wear at a concert when you're a little cold, usually at an outdoor concert. But they allow you to make clapping sounds instead of that padded, soft, unappreciative noise because they have sort of the same materials, you know, with flint and steel and a little bit of gunpowder that those Snap Pops have that you buy at the store on the 4th of July. So when you smack your hands together, you get a real nice solid clapping noise and a little flash of light too, just to call attention to yourself. So, you know, gloves for outdoor concerts when you still want to be able to make that noise.
Yeah.
Millenniums love them. I introduced some people at South X South W and they were real impressed by the product, at least the concept.
All right. Well, let's go to the line, 312-981-7200. Let's start with Matt. Matt, you're on. Matt, yay or nay on clappities?
Possible yay, but I do have a question. You're using flint and steel. Aren't you afraid that somebody's going to spark up and possibly start a fire?
That's a great question. Thanks, Matt. Thanks for the safety question. That's it's one you got to think about, especially when you're talking about R&D. What about the safety element of the Clapeteez?
Yeah, I tell you, you definitely wouldn't want to wear them if you suspect a gas leak anywhere nearby. That's something we put right on the box, though. But something we do with it is, you know, I mentioned there's a little bit of gunpowder sort of lacing the edges. So what will happen when you smack those guys together?
You know what? You didn't mention that part. That part didn't get mentioned. That's the first time you mentioned that.
Oh, I thought I said it.
It's fine. Way. It doesn't really change it for me, but I'm just letting you know that's,
well,
that's the first.
Well, but what that does is that consumes that potential fire real fast. It also adds to that banging noise you're going to get when you smack your hands together. So if you think about it, any chance of a fire is quickly extinguished as that gunpowder burns up and consumes that flame. That's a little bit of chemistry for your listeners there. I won't get too much into it, though.
Okay, 312-981-7200. Let's get some of these texts that are coming in. 630 says, I think we have a winner here.
That's great.
Yeah. 7847 says, winner, yes, good job. Wow, two of them now. How about that?
Okay. Yeah.
630 says, why not just fire cap guns off?
Well, you know, nowadays you're not allowed to bring anything that looks like a gun into a venue, even an outdoor venue, just because there's a lot of sensitivity about shootings and potential terrorism. You know, I think the yays you're getting, you know what that's representative of, is that people love to show their appreciation for things. And I think people have, in the past, felt a little embarrassed at not being able to make a solid clapping sound when you wear gloves at an outdoor concert.
I've been there. I don't know if I've been to an outdoor concert where it's that cold, but I have tried to clap at certain points with gloves on, so I do understand the sensation.
Yeah, you know, you go down to South X, South W like I did a couple weeks ago, and it's in Austin. You expect it to be warm. But I tell you, we had a couple chilly nights there, and those millenniums love those concerts at a festival like that. So, you know, perfect venue.
Right.
You bring those to a show like that, and you're basically printing money.
Okay, 312-981-7200. 630 said, Duke, he says, you may have something here.
Mm-hmm.
However, he needs to hear it first. Like, he needs to know how big the sound is here.
You know, I think the analogy that I like to give are those snap pops that you buy at the store. You whip them on the ground and you get that little pop. And I'm saying you multiply that by about 50. Now, it's hard to do that in your head. So if you picture like a starting gun at a race, I don't know how close you've been to the starting line, but you know, imagine that every time you smack your hands together. It's an impressive and a very appreciative sound.
All right, let's go to Adam. Adam, yay or nay on Clapeteez?
Well, you know, I'm on the kind of on the fence here. I have two quick questions. What is the expected number of claps that is expected that you still get a spark? And what is the age limit, the lower age limit?
Oh, that's a great question.
Thanks,
so,
Adam.
You know, age limit's really going to depend on the concert. If it's an all-ages show, we'll sell these to anyone. But, of course, if it's an 18-and-up show, we wouldn't want anyone under the age of 18 showing up. You know, with the materials we use, you get about 14 claps per pair. But the nice thing about it is you don't need to go out and buy another pair. I mean, that'd be expensive, right? Every 14 claps,
Right. Running
out and getting another pair. We do sell tins of the, and it's not exactly gunpowder, but it's a gunpowder-ish compound that you can spread onto the gloves again for another good 14 claps.
So like a refill.
Yeah, kind of like a refill. And what a lot of people, what our testers have been doing, is instead of carrying that tin around, they'll, before the show, put a lot of that thick gunpowder-ish paste on the thighs of their jeans. So when they see their claps are dying down a little bit, they'll just rub their hands on their thighs a little bit to juice those babies back up.
Huh. Let's go to Kevin.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
Yeah, go ahead.
That wasn't an invention of ours. That's something those millenniums figured out for themselves. So we do a lot of product testing, and I think millenniums especially, people give them a bad rap, but they come up with a lot of good ideas
right on the spot.
Target audience
there. All right, let's go to Kevin.
Yeah.
Kevin, yay or nay? You got a question, but yay or nay on Clapeteez?
I'm on the fence, actually. I'm curious. I got two questions. What are the gloves made of? What are the materials? What keeps your hands warm on the inside? And how much do the gloves weigh? And by any chance, does he have a pair there that we can actually hear what they sound like?
I wish. You know, I'm dialing in, and I don't. it'd be irresponsible of me indoors to use them. So I can't. Just safety reasons. You don't want to clap these suckers indoors, especially if you're near anything flammable. I'm near a gas stove. You never know when that sucker's leaking. So that can't happen, unfortunately. We do fill with goose down. Imagine a real thick winter glove. And part of that reason is we need to have at least 2 inches of padding between your flesh and the surface of the glove. So a nice thick glove like you'd wear skiing, or if you ever seen those gloves astronauts wear. As far as weight, you know what? Not too bad. About 3 pounds of glove, but I don't know if you've ever seen a 3-pound dumbbell. That's a tiny one. That's like the Richard Simmons
yeah,
size.
Right.
Just a real teeny one. You kind of laugh if someone has trouble with those. So, you know, I hope that answers questions.
Well, yeah. I think if anything, it may have introduced other questions.
Sure.
From that answer, well, but we'll
great.
Let the callers get to that. 312.
I'm telling you, I've never heard so many callers on the fence before, and I'm taking that as a good sign.
Well, there's a lot of yeah. I mean, there's a lot of yeses. There's also a lot of questions. Yeah. So serious questions about
but
safety. And
you know what time it is when you have all these callers on the fence? It's probably time to get a new fence.
Steve Gadlin, the frying pan, his invention idea tonight, Clapetees, gloves that have flint and steel etched inside of them so there can be a louder sound when you're at a concert outdoors. We're used to
Boy,
gloves.
Remind me not to hire you for the commercial.
I try my best, Steve. I try my yeah. best. 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll get to the other questions that are coming in text and the phone calls that are waiting on the line. And we'll get to everybody. Stay with us.
We will give you a beautiful 7 3/4-inch fry pan free of charge.
It's a download here at 720 WGN, and it is Friday night. Once a month, we take on the frying pan. It's where innovator, inventor, entrepreneur Steve Gadlin comes on the show with his latest invention, one that he is ready to pitch Mark Cuban. See, he won on Shark Tank with iwantodrawacatforyou.com. Now he has a development deal. Before he brings those ideas somewhere else, he brings them here to the download to workshop, to let us poke holes in it. Tonight, the idea is called Clapetees. Steve Gadlin, yeah. Clapetees.
Yeah, so these are gloves that you wear at outdoor concerts when you don't want to trade hand comfort for a lack of appreciation. So they are flint and steel etched into them, thick padded gloves, and when you slap your hands together, because of the little trace of gunpowder-ish compound that coats them, you don't get that soft padded gloved sound. You get a nice, powerful clap explosion, similar to those snap pops that you whip on the ground on the 4th of July, times about 50. But it's, that's it in a nutshell. It really helps you show your appreciation at a show without having to sacrifice hand comfort on a chilly night.
All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's get to the calls and texts because there's a lot of them. Let's go to Charlie. Charlie, yay or nay on the Clapetees?
That's a nay for me.
Hmm. Well, you're in the minority tonight then, Charlie.
I guess so. I started out on the fence. I really like the idea. It's a really cool idea. The more details I got about it, the less I was sure about it.
That's usually part of the course with Steve shows.
Yeah, but what details are turning you off, Charlie?
Well, the safety is a pretty big one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, using gunpowder and the idea that it would run out after about 14 claps. I think you run through that in just less than one performance.
Yes, but that's why we sell, again, you know, people smear that. And it's not gunpowder. It's a gunpowder-ish compound, sort of a jelly paste that people can put on the thighs of their jeans and then just wipe the gloves on those to refill. So, you know, you could potentially get through an entire show only spending, you know, let's see, at $150 a glove, that's $300, and then for enough refill to get you through a concert, it's probably just $100 a tin. So, again, a premium product, but that's the price you pay for the ability to show appreciation and not seem like someone who's unhappy with a concert.
Charlie, does that price point change your mind at all?
No, that
solidifies
makes,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's the price you pay once, right? You buy the gloves once. Sure, they're expensive, but it's the same thing when you buy a car.
You know, you buy it
especially
once.
With the price
paying.
Of concert tickets and buying merchandise at concerts, I don't think a lot of millennials would be all over that.
Well, but you got to think, you don't buy them for each concert. You know, this is something you've got in your home so that you know when you buy a concert ticket. You might need to spring $100 for another tin of the gunpowder-ish compound, but you're not going to have to buy the gloves again.
Right. All right. Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Wayne. Wayne, yay or nay on the Clapatees. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm on the fence, but I think that the one question I would have is most of your concerts and your big events have security.
Mm-hmm.
And would this compound get through without any repercussions?
Well, that's, you know, that's why a lot of the millennials were smearing it on their jeans. That's a place that security isn't trained to check. So, you know, you'd get through. And so long as you didn't try to bring it into an indoor concert, I think safety-wise, you'd be fine. You want a 3-foot radius between you, a buffer zone between you and any of the other patrons, just so they don't suffer hearing loss or potentially have their clothing catch on fire. But so long as you're able to clear that space out for yourself, I don't think you'll have a problem with security. You know, there's so much going on at an outdoor concert, it's very hard for security to even keep track of all of that at once. So, you know, maybe you get out of one or two concerts.
I'm thinking that this kind of a novelty item, which is really what it is, would be better used at, say, a New Year's Eve, an outdoor big New Year's Eve event.
Hey.
Yeah.
Some place where you really want to, you know, I don't see it replacing applause for a band. I wouldn't go to a concert if it's that cold anyway.
Right. That's
well,
a great point, Wayne.
Sometimes you can't plan on that, and then you get there. And if no one's wearing these things and everyone's wearing gloves, the band finishes a song, and it's like a dead, you know, it's crickets out there.
Right.
You don't hear a thing. So you just want to, the band won't even know to start playing the second song. And I would caution against using them at a New Year's Eve area. I think it'd be harder to carve out that 3-foot pad buffer for yourself.
Right.
And frankly, the noise is so loud, it can sound like a gunshot, and in the wrong context, especially New Year's Eve when, you know, people are always warning of people firing their pistols up into the sky. I don't think you want to call attention to yourself in that way. You might spook somebody too.
Yeah, we learn more and more about this project product. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Mike. Mike, yay or nay on Clapatees?
This ain't even worth saying nay. It is so despicable and horrendous, it ain't even worth saying nay. Let me ask this guy. The idea of putting gloves on your hand and then telling the people, clap, and the gloves will explode. Why'd you give the football players make helmets out of them? They got enough trouble with concussions now. They could blow their whole heads off.
Well, hey, I'm not going to say
that. How do you get them on an airplane? When you go to the security checkpoint at the airport, you just tell the guy, oh, I got gunpowder on these gloves, but don't worry. They just explode, but they don't hurt nobody.
Well, that's,
do you
that's
need a
not
firearm,
true.
Do you need a firearm owner's identification card to buy the gloves? And the last thing is, can you use them for holding up a liquor store? Can you walk into a liquor store and say, hey, give me the money or I'll shoot? And then you clap the gloves together a couple of times, and he thinks you're already shooting. And if you want to clap them together 5 or 6 times in a row, it'll sound like a machine gun.
Mike, it needs. Hey. You're right. I mean, this is what we need. We need a criminal mind to help Steve out to understand some of the things and the nefarious things.
Is Mike is answering his own question, so I really don't have to respond to it.
Why don't you invent exploding hand grenades and stick them up your booty hole?
All right.
That'll blow your brains out. That'll blow your brains out.
It would. It would blow a lot of things out. Thanks, Mike, for that. I don't know.
So he's on the fence as well.
He said he was on the
fence. Oh, boy.
312-981-7200. All right, let's do this. I got a slew. A slew of texts. I have probably 50 texts here. So why don't we do that? We got through the phone calls, 312-981-7200.
What's the tally so far? Are we yay?
Well, it's close. I think it's close. I think that we've heard some yays early on. I have to say, you had a lot more yays at the beginning, but as you sort of involve more of the product's intricacies, you've seen more nays come along. So we'll come. We'll take this last quick break. We'll come back. Okay. We'll do all the texts. We'll take calls. We'll keep going with this. 312-981-7200. It's the Frying Pan. Clap a tease. Yay or nay. Stay with us.
We will give you a beautiful 7 3/4 inch fry pan free of charge.
It's the Frying Pan, 312-981-7200. Steve Gadlin, the innovator, inventor, entrepreneur, is on the line. His newest invention, Clap-A-Tease, is getting yays and nays. We're getting close. Let's get through the text, Steve. We got a lot of text to get to.
All right.
Why don't we start with Sue from Glenwood, who says, I hate myself because I like the Clap-A-Tease.
That's great.
Wow.
What time did she text in?
This was early. This was like a 10:20.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
A little early, yeah.
Okay, well,
606 wants to know, is it Bluetooth compatible?
Yeah, they are actually Bluetooth compatible. They'll alert your phone when you're running low on that that gunpowder-ish compound. So, okay. Of course, you know, everything these days is Bluetooth compatible.
773 says it started as a so-so. He was doing great until he mentioned the gunpowder. That makes it a no-no.
Well, maybe gunpowder is the wrong word. It's a compound that uses gunpowder along with some other materials to turn it into sort of a paste, you know.
630 says, like, go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, that'd be like saying, no, I don't drink Coke because it has high fructose corn syrup. Yeah, but it's got a lot of other things too.
Right.
So, you know.
630 says, what a great idea. Sounds like fun. I frequently go to the symphony. The enthusiasm of the crowd causes the clapping to go on and on and on. It can be very fatiguing. Try to invent something which can be waved back and forth that can make that clapping sound. It must be dignified to suit the surroundings.
Well, I think these would be perfect for the symphony, to be honest.
Well, that's usually indoor, though.
Well, they do outdoor ones, like at Ravinia.
Oh, true. Yeah,
it'd
be
great. Thinking about putting them in the Ravinia gift shop. The price point, I think, is perfect for that crowd, too.
That's right. Maybe at a Hall & Oates, an acoustic Hall & Oates show.
That's right.
815 says, yeah, right? 815 says, chemistry. This guy has no knowledge of chemistry. Steel, flint, and gunpowder. That's the recipe for fire and slash or explosion. Fire made man, what are we, sorry, today. Made man who what we are today. Let's not have it be our undoing. Stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Well, look, everything in moderation is what I say to that. Yes, if I had a barrel of gunpowder, flint, and steel, I could cause a lot of damage. But we're talking about very small quantities, you know, thick padded gloves. And again, that 3-foot buffer zone between you and anyone else makes this a very safe product to use.
219 says, ask him if his creation came from him using the clapper in his parents' basement to turn off the TV at night.
No, my parents didn't have the clapper.
There you go.
No.
270 says, I was all about this till the 14 claps. That's not even one song. Also, will this jelly-like compound stain my jeans?
Well, you know, I don't want to answer that question because some things are still under development. And 14 claps, you know, one, that's per refill, not per show, obviously. You buy a 10 and you've got, you know, maybe 28 claps for the show. And that, you know, to me, just teaches clapping in moderation. But I tell you, one clap with these suckers on packs a lot of punch.
Yeah. 847 sounds to me that this would be dangerous to anyone sitting in front of you.
Yes. Yeah, oh, definitely.
About the 3-foot.
That's why you want to, yeah, keep a 3-foot buffer zone.
847 says, gloves are a dumb idea. I just take them off if I need to clap.
Well, fine. But, you know, that's one. Well, yeah, we thought of that, too.
Yeah.
But we think, you know, research, this is like an enhanced clap. But, yeah, that's a different audience. I think we're on the same page, though.
Okay, 618 says, what, can you use your phone when you're wearing them? Everyone takes pictures at concerts.
Yeah, sure. You can use your phone. You'll need to remove the gloves, and honestly, I wouldn't want your camera flash to go off near the gloves.
Okay.
So maybe have a friend. Well, the material we're using for the glove is also a tad light sensitive. So if flashing lights happen in their vicinity, you might spark something off and get a few unintended clap sounds when you're not even clapping them together. And that's just not something you want to catch you by surprise.
309 says most outdoor concerts have people smoking cigarettes and drinking beer. How safe would it be to use these gloves around those materials?
Well, these are perfectly fine around beer, but again, keep that 3-foot buffer, and I would stay vigilant for someone maybe flicking their ashes in your direction, because you're not going to want to, you're not going to want lit ashes again to just catch you off guard.
847. Yeah, go ahead. Sue from Glenview comes back again. She says, if you make them out of oven gloves, there's no danger of hand burns.
Yeah, that's something. That's something I thought of. Mm-hmm.
773 says, two questions. Why is he calling people who he's aiming the product at millenniums instead of millennials? It's millennials.
Well, no, I'm talking about, you know, how there's Gen X, there's baby booms, and then there's millenniums. It's like,
I think this person is saying that the mainstream pronunciation is millennials.
Well, but the millenniums are not into the mainstream. That's actually a big thing about them.
Okay, that sounds...
Okay. If you'd have been to South X, South W, like I have, you'd know, you'd know how to call them what they are.
773 also says, "Why is almost everything he quote unquote invents dangerous to those who would use it?"
Well, listen, everything that's ever been invented is dangerous if used incorrectly. I mean, heck, the light bulb. You buy a light bulb in a store, and it comes with an encyclopedia's worth of warnings, okay? So there are no inventions that don't carry some inherent danger, but hey, guess what? As a society, we learn to use them safely.
Right. 630, what kind of waste would be produced from this compound?
Just smoke.
Okay.
But again, people will be around you smoking cigarettes. Most likely. You know, there's a bit of a sulfuric smell, but not anything too different than a fireworks display.
815, take your gloves off and clap. What the heck's wrong with humanity?
Well, again, this is an enhanced clap. Right. Hey, if the sound that your two fleshy paws make when you slap them together is enough for you, if you think that shows the appropriate appreciation for the group that's poured their heart into the show you've just watched, then, you know, who am I to sell you something? That's great for you. But some of us carry around a lot of guilt that we're not able to show appropriate appreciation for those brilliant artists and musicians around us. So this is a product for that person.
Okay. All right. I'm going to kind of go through these as fast as we can because we've only got a couple minutes and we've still got 20, 25 of these. 773 says, ideas like this are why we have travel bans. 630 says maybe Steve could work osium into the compound to mask the marijuana smell at concerts.
I'm not sure what osium is.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, but something there. 773 says loving the show, but clapatees sounds like a newly found strain of an STD.
maybe change
the name, is what they're saying.
No, we put a lot of money and research into the name, and I think we have to stick with it at this point. Trademarks, .com, it's already purchased.
630 says, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
that's funny. But again, we would not suggest using these indoors.
Right. Let me see here. I'm going to read some of these on the way here. 773 says, rebranding explosives is the best way to make emergency rooms visits great again. 779 says, nay, totally dumb. How'd this guy get on Shark Tank with a draw a cat idea when there's so many others who have good ideas?
Yeah, well, you know, we could talk an hour about that alone. Yeah. So,
where are you at a concert outside with a 3-foot buffer?
Well, you've got to make that buffer. You know, a lot of times when you go to Ravinia,
I think their point is there's no player outdoor. There's no three, you know.
Well, here's the great thing about clappities. You clap once, you're going to get that 3-foot buffer, okay? People are going to scatter, and you're going to get yourself a nice 3-foot buffer for the rest of the show.
If this guy was on Shark Tank, they would immediately tell him to leave the room, Leo says.
Well,
that's
they
not
didn't.
True. Yeah, they did. They gave
didn't.
You
money. Yeah, no. You can Google it.
847 says, far too many negatives for this. 630 says, most concerts have light shows.
Yeah. Yeah, well, don't go to those concerts with these.
Right. 219 says, why do you have this tool on all the time? 815, the light bulb improved all of humanity. This guy's an idiot. What a dumbass. Another idiot.
I'd actually like to bring a pair, if I could, to one of my son's youth hockey games. I think that would go over well. Just to give him a trial.
Beta tester? Maybe Rob Martier can be a beta tester.
What do you
think,
Steve? Can you send me a pair?
Yeah, I'll send you a pair, but I'll, again, warn you not to use them in an arena setting. You want to stay away from a lot of those chemicals they throw on the ice, too. So.
Well, I'll be up in the stand, so it should be okay.
Oh, 3 feet, but there's got to be a 3 feet buffer.
Yeah, 3 foot buffer zone.
Well, the other parents don't like sitting next to me anyway, so.
Well, there you go. And Rob, I got a pair in the mail for you right now, sir.
Well, Steve, I don't know. I think it's very I feel like it's positive movement. I feel like you started off and people got, I think the more you revealed about the product, the more people sort of jumped off the fence in the wrong direction. But I will say that this more than ever showed that you have maybe something to work with here, Steve.
Well, I think I've got great ideas. And I think, Rob, I want to just give you a heads up. They're going to come in two separate boxes. You can't ship these things together. You could cause quite a stir at the post office. So,
not a problem.
Just watch for two packages. And, I think, Justin, with this one, you know, people harped on the negatives when I got into more details, but I really think the details were guided by the questions. So I think, you know, if people approach this with better questions, they'll get the kinds of details that make the product more attractive. So I'm going to call this one a win. I think any negatives that came out of this were just poor interviewing skills by your callers.
All right. Steve Gadlin on Once a Month with the Frying Pan. Steve, thanks so much for giving us your time tonight.
Hey, thanks for your time.
Well, that's going to do it tonight for us. Patty Vasquez up next. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNradio.com. Hope everybody out there has a great weekend. We'll see you back here. I think there's a Blackhawks game on Monday, but I think we're on afterwards because it's an early start. And then some shows Tuesday, Thursday, throughout the week. So we shall talk to you next week.